Democratic Party have lied to us about everything. They've lied about being the party of the middle class. They've lied about being the party of peace. This is a cadre of criminals and losers and spoiled children of affluent parents. These are people who were more concerned about looking like they were doing something for the American people than actually doing things for the American people.
Any Democrats you admire out there right now?
Democrats I respect. Oh, yeah, I mean, Bobby Kennedy I respect. Tulsi Gabbard.
Why are you laughing? Why are you smiling?
Because, like, they're on our team now. Because you guys kicked out, like, your best people. It's like the people that were into – this is a great point, though, Governor.
It is.
Is that Bobby Kennedy was a heterodox opinion on a thing that a lot of people were concerned about. Get him out! He's an anti-vaxxer.
Yeah.
Tulsi Gabbard, who is an anti-war. Get her out! She's a Russian agent.
Yeah.
Do you guys see how you have an unhealthy purification process where eventually you're left with just a 31% approval rating and a bunch of people that are talking to each other? And meanwhile, we're the ones that have Democrats in our cabinet winning the electoral majority vote, because there needs to be said, if Democrats are serious about being a majority party ever again, look at that ideological diversity.
Y'all were supposed to be the party of free speech, the party of women's rights. You have immolated all of those things. And then, as if enough weren't enough, you then decide that you're going to die on the hill of USAID, a government audit. You're trying to prevent a government audit because some of you really are trying to stay out of prison. We see the game now.
We will not shut up. We will stand up. We will speak up. We will rise up.
Y'all been out here telling us that the game was rigged against certain people. Well, now we found out who the people that were rigging the game were. Congratulations. Y'all are never going to win another political race ever again. Not if I can help it.
The crimes of the Democratic Party and the Labor Party in England and other key globalist parties are so bad that they will extinct themselves when this comes out. No one will want to be associated with them. And Trump's task force on election integrity is going to go out now. I mean, if you think Trump mitigated it with $200 million of money you donated to put tens of thousands of lawyers and experts and computer experts at all the polls everywhere to be there in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Georgia and Arizona when at midnight, here come the trucks without estate plates. And the lawyers are all waiting. They all had to file suits and fight just to even be there this time. But they were there at the election counting area with the court order. Sorry, you can't put up paper over the windows. You can't kick us out of the building.
We need to set the example for the whole world that we have the most secure elections in history, starting with that Save America Act. Shame on you, all you Republicans and Democrats sitting out there and don't realize that we, the people, want to have citizens vote in our elections. Not illegals. It's a pretty easy concept. You need two forms of ID to shovel snow in socialist New York. You should have to have a proof of that you live here to vote in our sacred elections.
California's not blue. New York's not blue. Nowhere is.
Again, 56% overall have an extremely or very much proud of the country. It's 29% among Democrats. It's 90% among Republicans. Look at that staggering gap between the parties.
It's no longer the overall electorate that doesn't like Chuck Schumer. Look at this change among Democrats themselves. Chuck Schumer's net favorable rating with Dems now versus the last time Democrats were going for that Senate majority. In early 2020, look at this. Chuck Schumer was 40 points above water, very much on the positive side of the ledger with Democrats. Look at this. Look at this change. This is nuts. Johnny B. off on the side going, my goodness gracious. Now he's a point underwater with Democrats.
No one likes them for decades. They steal elections. And once a place goes blue, it never goes back. Why is that? And also people then give up and say voting doesn't work, which then helps even more. They've only got so much they can steal. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Now in the 21st century, it's time to stand up and realize that we should not allow ourselves to be crammed into this rat maze. We should not submit to dehumanization. The 21st century is going to be a new century. Not the century of slavery. Not the century of lies, issues of no significance, and classism, and statism, and all the rest of the modes of control. It's going to be the age of humankind standing up for something pure, something right.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
I want freedom! That's what I want! And that's what you should want!
You're listening to Alex Jones.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it!
AlexJonesLive.com. Tomorrow's news today.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. It is Monday afternoon, the 29th of June, 2026. Hope everybody's doing well. We, of course, have a whole weekend's worth of news to go over, including massive decisions by the Supreme Court, developments in the Iran war, as well as just general politics and culture, of course, to go through, and a lot of videos to get to as well, including some rather, personally, I find them disheartening videos from the big state fair that Donald Trump is holding in Washington, D.C. And I feel like it in a lot of ways, like the reflecting pond, is symbolic of our entire situation. And I'm completely torn between a feeling of just like indescribable sadness of what is going away and the fact that we're losing it without even putting up a fight, while at the same time still seeing the dying ember and just wanting to breathe life back into it. And I spent this whole weekend feeling this way a little bit. I just did totally disconnect and was doing a bunch of yard work, but I was driving through small town Texas and it still exists. Like, America's still out there. There are still little pockets of this country that are just eye-wateringly beautiful. American flags hanging up everywhere. Kids going to the rodeo. Like, it's still out there. And it's just this bizarre feeling of just like, do y'all get what's being done to you? Like, do you get that without a change in trajectory, just like year over year, these celebrations of American history and heritage and culture, they're just going to get a little bit less exciting, a little bit less care put into it, just bit by bit, incrementally, until it's just gone, until it's just not even remembered. So I've just, this whole weekend, I don't know, I was just like plagued by this feeling of just, you know, being in the store and seeing a group of people and just being like, wow, look at these beautiful people going to a lake or something. They're all carrying their like rubber, you know, floaties and stuff. And it's just like, ah, Americana, it's beautiful. And then I just feel this like shadow behind me, this just like great darkening cloud coming over all of it. I'm just like, do they even know? Because right now it's like, there's more than enough. If I had a magic scepter, if I had a brain control device, it's like the people of America, the wealth of America, the prosperity, the capability, like we've got plenty. We've got more than enough expertise, and like there's nothing actually stopping us from just reclaiming our country and just running it correctly. But just nobody knows. Just nobody is doing that. And every year that goes by, it's going to be that little bit harder to reclaim what we're losing. And it's just, we're just in this decline. This declining spiral, and all it takes to get us out of this is awareness. That's it. That's all it takes. It just takes a modicum of awareness for the average person, and I've said it a million times, just to understand that things don't just happen. Things don't just occur like big you know, population changes, whatever it is. This is being done to you. It's being done on purpose. It's being done by design. You are under attack. And I know it sucks because, you know, what is more fun than fighting the New World Order? Going and playing on a lake, going and laying out by the river, doing some fishing with your kids. Of course, that is the preferable way to spend your afternoon. The problem is your enemies aren't hanging out on the lake. Your enemies aren't teaching their kids to fish. Your enemies are diabolically laboring every hour of the day to destroy everything good in the world. So again, what this little rant of mine is about is, of course, the 250th anniversary of America and these little pockets of patriotism that you find around the country and the understanding that it's all being taken away. And it would be so easy to keep and preserve and even expand and accelerate classic American beliefs, the foundational mindset that we try to champion here. It's just up to y'all, I guess. I guess it's entirely up to y'all. We can start off with some of these videos. Clip number two here. This was posted. The Trump freak show, baptizing Americans under a massive Israeli flag and a menorah. Just one little extra bit to this. And I don't even know really how to cover this. So there you see the above ground pool that I guess they're baptizing people in. Theoretically, there don't seem to be any actual people there. So that would be a bit of a wrinkle in the plan. But it's kind of like, I know Trump mentioned, you know, we were going to do a big 250th thing. Like at the beginning of his administration, it seemed like the world was laid out in front of us like a delicious feast. It seemed like we had a year and a half about to get everything in order. And the assumption was, okay, this time next year, right? In 2025, we were looking around July 4th being like, man, in 1 year, the deportations will be done. The Antifa will be rounded up. Like all of these things have been plaguing us. And for 4 years, were deliberately inflicted on us on purpose in an attempt to destroy our country. But we won and we got it back. And now comes the counteroffensive. Then that counteroffensive just never arrived. And the things that we expected Trump to do just never happened. So, you know, looking back at the beginning of the Trump administration, I was very much looking forward to the 250th year celebration, July 4th. It would have been like a little bit less than halfway through Trump's second administration. So, you know, I was really looking forward to this big national carnival where, you know, finally we could just put all the woke crap to rest and celebrate in a patriotic way. And things just went off the rails. They just kept going further and further off the rails. Obviously, the war in Iran, the Epstein files were two major ones, but I think the lack of deportations, maybe even higher on the list in terms of real, you know, blatant abandonment of his campaign promises. And so I guess that's what it is. You know, I guess they say inside of every cynic is a disappointed optimist. I guess that's the feeling that I'm feeling, is looking around and going, imagine what this could be. Imagine what this could have been. Imagine a different timeline, a timeline where Donald Trump just hits the ground running, puts his nose to the grindstone, and just does what he promised to do. And here we would be in that other timeline. We'd be sitting here on the same day. And I wouldn't have had to find out that this 250th carnival was happening because of the post I just showed you. Like, that was the first thing I saw, and it's like, 250th what? There's some sort of fair going on? Like, yeah, I remember him talking about it, and I know there have been some, you know, preparations here or there. But this was supposed to be like a big deal. Like, what I would have expected to happen in my fantasy of a world where Donald Trump does what he says he's going to do, be like, for the last 6 months, you know, every school is having contests to try to make the best decorations, and the best ones would be displayed at the state podium, and it would be a, you know, whole. But that's sort of the thing, isn't it? Is that I don't know if that's ever going to happen again. Not in the way that we're going, not in the trajectory that we're headed. I mean, we showed you videos of the bicentennial, the 1976 celebration. And yeah, you got the impression like this is what everyone was doing at that time. Everybody was doing something about it. Every single business was running specials and having giveaways. Every single school was having, you know, performances and, you know, putting on pageants and all this sort of stuff. And this time it's just, that's not going to happen. And I don't know if it'll ever happen again, because the people that actually are American and celebrate American history are being replaced with people who don't. So are we going to reclaim this? Is that even possible? We've got more videos. In fact, the one I just had y'all pull in, I'm not sure if it's even been put in the machine yet. Yeah, 50 here. Step right up, folks. Witness the end of an empire. So we can go ahead and roll this as B-roll. This is the great 250th celebration. This is the mock-up of the Arc de Triomphe. And it looks like crap. It looks like absolute crap. And this is what I mean is being a symbol of America. It's like, could we not get this done? Could we not make this look actually good? It's sort of the perfect example of America, actually. It looks heroic. It looks triumphant from far away. Yeah, it looks like an empire of power from far away. You get up close, and it turns out the whole thing's patched together with, you know, Tic Tac and super glue. It's crumbling. It hadn't even been up for a day, and it's already coming apart. Big cracks along the seam. I think it matters. I think it matters. Does it matter that much? You know, who cares? It's going up for a few days. It's a little piece of decoration. It just needs to look good from far away for photos. That's all right. But isn't that emblematic of everything in this country? It's just like, how do we do this as cheaply, as quickly as possible to cover the bare minimum? Technically what we're obligated to do, but no more, nothing further, right? No one's going to put extra effort into this. No one's going to go above and beyond. No one's going to, you know, pay for something that's purely symbolic in celebrating America. Where's the utility? How many Haitian children are being fed by this? None? Well, then we're not doing it. And again, it's just this collection of B-roll for our radio listeners. It's just showing the, I guess, cardboard mockery of the Arc de Triomphe, the American version of that. But the whole fairground was like this. It looks empty. I didn't even know what was going on. Like, again, I can just imagine an alternative timeline when it's like, you can't not be there. Like, what do you mean you're not going? Everybody you know is going. You got to sign up now. Like, all the hotel rooms are going to be gone. But, like, it's just not happening. It's just not happening because literally half of our country genuinely hates our history. Like, they're not going to celebrate it. They're not going to travel to celebrate it. Certainly, they're not going to be involved in this. Again, it's sad. But it's like, what are you supposed to do? You can't compel people to love this. You can't compel people to participate in this. I mean, I think there are entire states that just chose not to participate. So again, you know, I don't even know if I have anything to add to it. It's just like, this is just our country now. It's just a bunch of people who have nothing in common, don't believe the same things, entire states that just are like quietly quitting the union itself. It's getting a modern thing, I guess. Back in the day, it'd be, you know, we are seceding, you know, come and take it. Nowadays, it's just like, yeah, we just decided, yeah, the Supreme Court, like, we just aren't going to do those laws, actually. Actually, we just believe in diversity, so I don't think we're going to follow those laws, actually. And the authorities are just like, well, you were supposed to. It's like, and then that's it. That's like the entire, that is the modern version of, you know, Fort Sumter, basically. It's not, you know, stake, you know, raising the flag of rebellion and, you know, going toe to toe to decide what the good course of our history be. It's just like a bunch of people that hate America, despise America, and are like open, you know, pretty open about their strategy of just like, just say what you need to get elected and then get in and do what you really want to do. Like that's their strategy now. It's working. It's succeeding. It is an effective strategy because people aren't paying attention and they see a commercial with somebody that's just like, I want to help working families. And they're just like, great, I'm a working family. I'll vote for that person. Meanwhile, the person behind the scenes is a literal raging communist that despises you and wants to set your children on fire. And like, I'm not even exaggerating. That's the person you're voting for because they literally just said like, I want to help you. And you're just like, oh, okay, great. Great. Here's my kids. Here you go. Thanks for help. Why are they burning? My kids are burning now. Darn. Darn it. I guess I better vote for her again. I don't get it. I don't understand what's compelling people, but you can look at the fairgrounds and basically see what the end result of the last 50 years of the new society, the total recreation, reimagining of human life itself. It's been an abysmal failure. It's time to go back. It's time to start over again. And we'll get into all the stuff that has occurred recently. We'll get into the Supreme Court decisions and the war and all of that crazy nonsense that's occurred, but I genuinely have kind of like a hard time really getting into all this stuff because it's just the same thing over and over. It really is just the exact same thing over and over and over again. One Supreme Court decision that we just, you know, talked about last week, and this is the thing, like I talked about all this stuff last week, but one of the court decisions was removing temporary protected status, and we explained ad nauseum the definition of the word temporary. And then over the weekend, Mark Wayne Mullen, head of the DHS, basically says, yeah, but the TPS people can actually, you know, they can actually apply now for permanent status. And so you can take what I said on Friday about like the suffering and the effort and the energy that goes into getting a case all the way up to their Supreme Court. And I was expressing frustration in the fact that we get all the way to the Supreme Court. We fight all of these battles. We win every single battle all the way up to the Supreme Court. We win in the Supreme Court. They decide in our favor and then just nothing happens. The people who are violating the order of the Supreme Court continue to violate it. There is no enforcement mechanism to make them comport themselves with the dictates of the highest court in the land. So it almost doesn't matter. This is worse. This is worse because this is the Republicans, the native heritage Americans, fighting desperately through the court system to try to get the, and again, I just like, I don't even want to go over the history, but basically temporary protected status, it was supposed to expire. A random judge stepped in and said, actually, it should go on forever. Complete insanity. They're not even allowed to do this because that was in violation of a earlier Supreme Court decision about nationwide injunctions, why this was even allowed. Regardless, okay, through all the BS, we get it all the way up to the Supreme Court. We win there. They acknowledge the obvious that temporary protected status is temporary and that you can deport illegal aliens. Thank you, highest court in the land, for telling us the sky is blue and water is wet. But okay, fine. We win. We actually succeed. We finally get the legal imperative to do what should have been done a long time ago. And then the Republicans themselves say, actually, we're not even going to do it. We're not even going to enforce it. We're not even going to take advantage of the Supreme Court case that we just spent years forcing through the process. We get the victory and then we don't even do it. You know, it's kind of like whenever Republicans would point to something the Democrats were actively doing at the time. And they're saying, oh, you shouldn't do that because that's starting that's opening up a precedent. You wouldn't like it if we do it. Then they never do the thing. Okay. That happens once. Maybe it's a fluke. The second time that happens, that threat no longer works. It is no longer a restraining mechanism to their ambitions. And it in fact only makes you look weaker every time you threaten to do something and not follow through. It's only making things worse. So I don't know how much longer, how much more I can talk about this, how many different ways there are to express this exact same thing. But the problem here is the Republican Party. Full stop. You've got governors and mayors from Ohio Republicans, and it's like every single time that we achieve a victory, they steal it from us. They abolish it. In every situation, whether it's mail-in ballots, we can't even get the SAVE Act passed. It's not happening. What is the point? What is the point of any of this if we got Republicans into office dominating the Congress and the Senate, and we can't even get just the basic controls? It's not even, it shouldn't even be an option. It's like, if you're going to have votes deciding the course of your country, you have to know those votes are valid. Like, how is this even a conversation? But fine, we go through the whole process, we win. And then, you know, the Republican, there's a phrase somebody's come up with it about it, where it's just basically like they just don't want to be excluded from their country club lunches. That could be it. Maybe they just have a friend that happens to run a successful construction business that relies almost entirely on illegal labor or imported Haitian labor. That is, by the way, you know, made up for by the government. Like, there was a video that's gone viral, and we played it when it first came out, but it's gone sort of viral again recently. And it's a factory worker in Ohio talking about how much he loves Haitians because they'll work for less. And of course, the obvious, you know, response is like, you're literally just bragging about using globally sourced scab labor to undercut your neighbors and give foreigners who hate you jobs at a factory. But it's even worse than that, because the government themselves subsidizes the wages. Every Haitian in Springfield under TPS, temporary protected status, gets at least $1,400 a month in federal benefits. So, yeah, you can hire, it's basically like the government saying, you can hire your neighbor Jim, who's grown up in Ohio and his family's been here for 10 generations, and you can pay him, you know, $18 an hour, or you can hire this person from Haiti, pay them $12 an hour, we'll make up the difference for you, we'll actually give them some on top of it, they'll actually end up better off than Jim later, because we're taxing Jim, taking Jim's money to give to the Somalian so that you can hire the Somalian for lower wages so you can kick Jim out of the workforce. So this is how literally everything is everywhere. And at a certain point, we have to decide whether or not we want to continue to exist as a nation. And if so, we have to elect people whose priority is our continuing existence as a nation, not the GDP. And that is the exact dichotomy that's existing here. I'll show you a video on the other side where, yeah, governors of American states are like, I can't believe you don't want these Haitians here. Haitians who buy houses and pay mortgages and have a car payment. And it's like, I don't even know if you realize what you're saying. You're literally just like, but money. I know I'm destroying the fabric of your society in a way that is irreparable forever. But the money, though, but I get a little bit more money if I do it. So I guess here we are, stuck at the crossroads. I'll show you that video and more on the other side. We'll talk about the actual effects of the Haitians being forced out of our country. By the way, I got in trouble, folks. I got in trouble because I really did steal one of these hats, and then I got yelled at. So, folks, don't be like me. Don't be a no good, dirty, rotten thief. Be a supporter of the InfoWar by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Get one of these 1776 America 250th birthday hat and wear it guilt-free, knowing you paid not full price, but an extremely affordable price at thealexjonesstore.com.
There are billions of ways for people to be culturally, spiritually, politically, environmentally engaged. And there are millions and millions of different programs and podcasts and radio shows and things around the world, out of the 10 million people on this planet. But on the record, what we've done at InfoWars, and this is just the second leg of that at alexjoneslive.com, has changed the world. Our guests, our callers, our researchers, our reporters, and my overall futuristic analysis and view of the destiny of humanity, which I don't claim to be 100% accurate, but it's definitely proven to be a good template to observe the world, has had a giant effect, and the globalist do not like it. So when you share that local AM and FM station that you listen to and tell those you share it with to share it, it changes the world. When you say this is forbidden information at alexjoneslive.com that has the free audio and video feeds and archives and shows and articles. You are literally going in the face of the censors and the tyrants. You're changing the world. It seems simple. It seems little, but it's not, because we have millions of listeners and viewers. And if we can leverage that out to millions more and have them leverage it out, that creates the chain reaction. And all the great guests and hosts we've had on over the years who were already great, successful, they'll tell you how much more their shows blew up once they were on air here with this operation. We are here to get the next generation, black, white, old, young, to awaken to the epic time that we're all alive in right now and take action. So your word of mouth is key, your prayer for the broadcast is key, and supporting us financially is so key. And we make it symbiotic, where everything you get at thealexjonesstore.com will empower you, will enrich you, and will be an adventure. The Patriot Apparel, some of the best designs ever, limited edition for the 250th anniversary of the United States of America, are out right now. Right now, ladies and gentlemen. And this latest design, these limited edition, America, red, white, and blue on, you know, Sterling Royal Blue, 76, America 76, 250 years. That is a really cool shirt. I think it's going to be a bestseller. It just came out today. And all the other 250th anniversary limited edition shirts are available right now as well at thealexjonesstore.com. So be sure and check those out. I thank you for your support. But wearing these out in public, meeting like-minded people, spreading the word, it's an adventure in and of itself, and it funds this operation, which is exposing the next pandemic, the next attempted lockdowns, the next big globalist war. You are financing your own future for a better future and better destiny when you keep this broadcast on the air. But you can also experience the InfoWar on the ground wearing these great shirts. Also, we have the new dual carbon platinum gravity fed filter, the highest quality gravity fed carbon filters that are the highest rated, cutting out all of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of horrible forever chemicals that are out there. And it has the highest quality stainless steel. Nobody has got a filter with better filtration. It's the highest rated, and nobody has as beautiful a filter as this, and ours is way under the price of competitors that are crap. This is the best. It's a home run by Bigley, our sponsor. We're so proud of it. Here's the issue. 1,000 of these came in. It sold out in 3 days. They got a couple thousand more coming in like late next week. Those are pre-order right now. They're going to be sold out soon, and then I'm going to stop promoting it until they get even more in, because I don't like doing pre-order. But if you want to be at the head of the line to get these while you still can, and not have to wait a month or so after that, get your order in now, right now, at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're on the site, check out all the other great Patriot apparel, the super high quality military grade belts, all the great supplements and more at thealexjonesstore.com.
Back, folks. I got a bunch of videos to go to about what's going on with the Somali community and the Haitian community in places like Springfield, Ohio. Which, the fact that it's Springfield, I just can't help but see the Simpsons. I just can't help but picture the Simpsons and their Springfield. And I think they should remake the entire Simpsons series, but a fifth of the characters should have to be Somali. And they won't actually participate in the hijinks the Simpsons get up to, but, you know, they'll be sort of cloistered at the back of the class. Like every shot of Miss Krabappel's, you know, elementary school, just the last three rows, all the girls should be in headdresses and all the boys should be Somalian. And they should be sort of jabbering at each other in their own language, and the rest of the Springfielders just sort of tolerate and ignore them. I think it could actually add a very interesting dimension to the show. Remember when they thought Apu on The Simpsons was like the greatest racism ever? We've come a long way since then. So I got a lot of videos to show you about all of this. And let's begin back in time. Let's begin at clip number 11 here. This video is from January of 2010. This is Obama's DHS secretary, Janet Napolitano, announcing that she signed the Haitian TPS order. So this was 2010, 16 years ago. Here's her announcing that there would be a moderate increase in Haitian immigrants, but they'll be here temporarily 90 days, maybe something like that. Here we are 16 years later. Here's Janet Napolitano announcing TPS for Haitian migrants in 2010.
Lastly, as has been widely reported yesterday, I signed the order beginning or for the process of TPS status for Haitians already in the United States. This is a kind of an intermediate immigration status that allows those who are here to remain and to work. And as they work, of course, many send remittances back home. This in and of itself is a form of support to Haiti and a form of economic assistance to Haiti. To qualify, you must have been in the United States before January the 12th, the date of the earthquake. It will be good for 18 months from the date of the
18
issuance.
18 months.
So in July of 2011. So for Haitians in the country who were here before the earthquake, we are now opening up the process of TPS, that intermediate immigration status for you.
So yes, folks, 18 months. Don't worry, it'll all be over in the summer of 2011. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the Haitians that are here to this day are supposedly under temporary protective status because of an earthquake in Haiti 16 years ago. 16 years ago. Now, obviously, attitudes have changed a little bit since that happened. But we showed you a video last week of a congressman named Emmers, Congressman Emmers, and he was going off saying, you're supposed to be nice about these people, but I'm done being nice, basically. I'm not holding back anymore. We don't want these people in our state. They need to get out. They're not assimilating. They're completely incompatible, in fact. This is no good. And it was great. And we played it and said, yeah, he's exactly right. We need to see more people talking like this. Representative Tom Emmer faces backlash for telling Somalis to go the hell back to where they came from. Yeah, a backlash. Here's the issue, though. 11 years ago, Tom Emmer himself completely disregarded and dismissed the very meaningful and accurate concerns that his constituency had about bringing in a bunch of Haitians. So in fact, this was profiled on NPR, and you sort of read along, they have a article here that is the transcript of the NPR episode. But here's Tom Emmer, who just last week got in hot water for telling Somalis to go the hell back where they came from. Listen to him 11 years ago dismissing his own constituents, saying exactly what has in the ensuing time come to pass. Let's watch.
Bobby told me he started freaking out about this exactly 1 year ago. It was in July of 2015 at a town hall meeting in St. Cloud.
I wish all of you guys would give him a big hand here at ACES.
This is Bobby's local congressman, Tom Emmer. They're at the ACES bar in downtown St. Cloud. The room is packed. People are squished in around the bar. This is one of many town halls Emmer does regularly all over the district. And it's going normally, a little awkwardly, till this guy says, I think most of us are here to find out how you feel about assimilation of immigrants. Assimilation of immigrants. The congressman is confused, so the questioner clarifies.
We did not ask for those Somalis. Nobody asked us if we in St. Cloud want those Somalis. And we understand that social groups like the Lutheran Social Service and the Catholic Charities, they're dumping them in areas like St. Cloud. Okay, and so the question is, how many more are coming? We didn't ask for these people. Everybody that you read about is talking about this. So that is a main issue in this city. There is no control. The people have no control over any immigration. The mayor.
Hold on. Let me pause it right there, because again, what that guy said. What is the objection to it? What is the objection to it? He's just like, nobody asked us if we wanted these people here. They've dumped in literally tens of thousands of these people who are not assimilating. This was all the way back in 2011. And the question is, what's wrong with what that guy just said? Because they're about to portray it as if, you know, this guy's calling for a new Holocaust of Haitians this time. And it's like, it's just almost hard to believe that our entire culture is so brainwashed. That's like a very obvious and simple objection like that is completely ignored, dismissed, and actually treated as if it's offensive. When really, literally all he's saying is just like, these people aren't assimilating. Like they're just, it's just a foreign colony in my hometown. I don't like this. I wasn't asked about this, but I'm paying for this. Like this is crazy. This is crazy. Now, in retrospect, the citizens probably should have been a hell of a lot more angry and offended, because this is kind of the thing. Any other group wouldn't even have to make this argument. Any other population, it would have never even happened. But the instant that they objected to it, there would have been no question about it. It would have, you know, long story short, this is an attack against you. This is an attack that they depend on you taking casually. Going, well, look, I'm just, you know, we didn't ask them. I'm just like wondering, you know, when is this going to be enough? When is enough enough? When are they going to stop coming? When are they going to go home? Like, I just want to know. What we now know is the correct reaction should have been to, you know, burn down the city hall or something. Not now, of course. I'm saying 15 years ago, that probably would have been more effective. Although, I don't know. Then it just would have been like, oh my God, these white supremacists, and they would have used that as an excuse to bring in 50,000 more. And do you remember how these Haitians were trapped, quote-unquote trapped, under the Eagle Pass near El Paso? And they were there for like weeks until there was that embarrassing image that was posted. This was all under the Biden administration. And the next day, they were all gone. Remember that? We reported on it live at the time, saying, you know, they could clear these people out in a day if they wanted to. They just don't want to. And it went on for weeks. And then finally, something embarrassed the Biden administration, and they were gone. Literally, they were gone the next day. Everything was cleaned up. Everything was packed up. And they were all shipped to Springfield, Ohio. Crazy. So let's go back. So again, 15 years ago, Representative Tom Emmers, supposed Republican, was still falling for the line of multiculturalism, diversity, tolerance, acceptance, the melting pot. The people who were doing this, they knew that they were never going to assimilate. They knew that this was not good for America. This was just an attack. And you can hear, and I listen with inexpressible sadness to the voice of the American patriots who are having their homelands destroyed, just asking politely to be considered in any of this. Just asking if maybe, just maybe, the well-being of the people that actually live there might be a topic of conversation. And you can hear how Tom Emmers himself responded. Let's watch.
It's like, what are you even talking about? If someone's here legally, you don't get a say in whether they come into your city. And he fires a warning shot at the implicit racism here against Somalis, as if to say, don't go further down this road, you guys.
And if you're asking me how I feel about immigrant populations who are in this country legally and who are actually trying to find a better way for themselves and their families, I support it wholeheartedly. I mean, the Germans had the same problem when they came over. The Polish had the problem. The Chinese had the problem.
We have a different problem.
Really? They didn't come to subvert the Constitution.
You're not addressing the idea that they're not being assimilated. The other people,
I'm going to tell you, the Somalis, according to the measurements that have been used over time, are some of the fastest assimilating populations that we've had.
Insane.
There are Somalis in the room, too.
I hear all the time the word assimilation. You know, I feel myself assimilated.
I speak English. I have a job. I have a family. I drive the same streets every day, just like you. What's the thing that's missing?
All right, let's pause it right there. Because that's kind of telling, isn't it? The guy who can barely speak English, super heavy accent. In fact, the reporter feels the need to translate what he's saying because he's sort of incomprehensible to a native English speaker. But he's like, we assimilate. I drive on the road you drive. I have a job. It's like, what do you think assimilating means? That's just being a human being. You think you're going to have your own separate roads? Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, every human being uses the roads. That has nothing to do with assimilation. Every human being eats food. Like, what are you talking about? Are you having a cookout, eating pork sausage and, you know, hanging out in your shorts? No, your wives are covered head to toe and they're not allowed to leave the house without permission. You haven't assimilated then. But it's telling because that to him is American culture. He's like, I'm wearing a baseball cap. I drive on the road you drive on. How am I not American? It's almost like more insulting than him actually just hating America. Is his interpretation of what assimilating even means is just all of the most surface level, meaningless accoutrement, the bare liminal appearance of being an American. He's like, good enough. It's like you're so unassimilated, you don't even know that there's something to assimilate into. Assimilation would be genuine, full-fledged adoption of our way of life, our beliefs. You wouldn't be labeled as Somali man in the NPR article, would you? You'd be labeled man. You'd be labeled American man or something like that. But you're not American. You're Somali. And yet, in order to convince us that you're American, which I keep replaying the tweet from Harmless Yard Dog where he's like, imagine debating with a tick on whether or not it has a right to drink your blood. Like that's, you know, you're a foreigner. You come to America. Now you get to dictate to us what it is to be an American. This is absurd on the face of it. But regardless, his understanding of what it is to be an American is the most basic. Again, sort of like, I mean, I get you just put it in any other, you know, cultural situation, right? Where it's just like, what? I understand what it's like to be a black American. I drink Kool-Aid. It's like, what? That's what you think? Look, I drink Kool-Aid and I watch basketball. I perfectly understand the black American experience. It's like, what? You know, like, can you imagine the amount of, like, ignorance that would represent on my part? But that's how this guy reacts. I'm just as American as you are. I drive on the same roads you are on. I watch football, I guess. I'm American. It's like, okay, do you pray to Allah five times a day? You do. Okay. Do you wear your shoes indoors? Do you eat with your hands? Do you pray to Mecca when you slaughter animals live? Like, you are still culturally, religiously, and nationalistically not American. But they don't even know that because of how demonized and destroyed American culture has become. They literally think it's nothing but like Hollywood or whatever. So, sorry, let's go back to the NPR reporting. We'll hear Tom Emmers respond to this outrageous hatred and racism that, by the way, he now completely agrees with and understands. Let's watch.
If you guys have any questions, anything to talk about, come to us. We'll answer all your questions. We will address your fears. But I don't think there's nothing we have to fear in America.
Some people in the room don't buy it. They push back and demand a vote on refugees. Emmer pushes back, too.
I'm going to say it out loud. When you move to a community, as long as you are here legally, I am very sorry, but you don't get to slam the gate behind you and tell nobody else that they're welcome. That's not the way this country works. And if we're going to talk about...
I didn't think it was a problem until somebody I knew really well, because they got upset.
This is Tom Emmer talking about that night.
And he says, sounds like you're telling us. You're not listening to us.
We also work hard, and we also pay our taxes, and we also have kids to raise and go to school. And there's a huge economic burden placed on us now. And I think part of the fear that some of you talked about, our fear, is that we don't feel in control of what's happening in our city. It is out of our control. Where is our say on what happens to our schools? I don't know that you heard us. I feel you told us.
And I thought I'd been listening all night. So then I stopped and I said, because then I thought, this is a problem because this person is not that way.
Say what you mean, this person is not that way. What does that mean?
They're reasonable. They listen. They're compassionate. They have definite, strong views, right? Their views are much like mine. I've known them for a long time. And this person was clearly frustrated. And so I stopped and I said, I apologize. What is it that you would like your congressman to do?
You're our only chance because...
For what? Sue, what is it that you want?
What is it
that you want from me?
This is... I think I speak for a lot of people. Yes. I think the city of St. Cloud needs a breather. And we need to assimilate with the people
that are trying to...
a break on the influx for a period of time so we can take a little breather and all...
Your last statement, though. We can take a little breather. If you guys can just hold on. It was, say it out loud. Are you suggesting that no more immigrants should be allowed to come to St. Cloud until you have
a moratorium for
the whole United States? The whole United States. All right. Here's the thing.
That's
all I can do is respond as open and honest as I can, Sue. That's not something that I can do. That's not something that our Constitution says that we do with people who are...
That was the first time
it's
that
so
I think...
It's so crazy. All right, we can go ahead and take it down now. But again, you can hear, you know, sort of his pre-programmed responses where he, like, seems shocked that these people are, like... He's like, she's not that way. He like, expects literally anybody against the foreign takeover of their hometown must be a KKK member. And it's like, I don't even get that, because here's these people that you know, that you've interacted with a lot. You know they're not crazy. You know they're not racist or whatever other label you want to put on them. And yet, when they express to you in a perfectly cogent and reasonable and thoughtful way, you know, their opposition to what's going on, he still goes, like, he has to, like, take a second to be like, well, wait, but she's not a KKK member. Why is she saying this? It's like, because it's... true. Like, it's that mindset that, again, I'm glad he's broken out of it. This was 11 years ago that recording was made, but, like, there's still a lot of Republicans, especially, still in that exact same mindset where it's just like, legally, there's nothing we can do. They're legal immigrants. And it's like, so what is the legal process through which they became legal immigrants? Because the whole point of the TPS system, or even the asylum system, is it is a temporary suspension of the law based on extraordinary circumstances. The extraordinary circumstances of this case were an earthquake that happened 16 years ago. Shouldn't even qualify as the extraordinary circumstance to get around the law anyway. But this is the color of the law nonsense that they always get up to, where and get away with. Where they can open up the border and flood your country with 10 million people, and there's no barrier and there's no requirement to comport with the previous precedent and law and whatever else. It just happens. And then it is impossible for you to undo it. That's the part that's illegal. Well, but they have, you know, you can't get rid of them. You can't tell them where they can and can't go. They're legal immigrants. It's like, well, what made them legal immigrants? The fact that the Democrats decided they wanted them here, so therefore they're legal immigrants. As ANC Aesthetics puts it, the Biden administration dropped 200,000 third world Haitians into small towns all over the country to try to disenfranchise poor Trump voters. That's ethnic cleansing. In a real country, everyone involved would get the death penalty. You're lucky we're just sending them back. This in response to Kevin M. Olmert decrying the utter disregard for human life, the void of compassion, telling a bunch of Haitian people, go back home, go home to your country. Remember, like, 3 years ago when all the leftists were trying to convince us that thinking Haiti was a shithole country was horrible and that it was a great place, and Conan O'Brien is drinking a mojito, I guess they've changed their tune a little bit. He continues, and we know it was deliberate ethnic cleansing because no Haitian knows where the F Springfield, Ohio even is. They were deliberately placed in Trump strongholds in swing states as revenge against Trump voters for the crime of voting for who they want as president. But it goes back farther than that because this happened under Obama. And yes, it was for exactly the same reason. They hated you before you voted for Trump, folks. And yes, they literally, and I've talked about this just any number of times. I don't even know how many times at this point. But the whole point of these programs was to gift congressional districts to these people. Because think about it. If you add the same number of people, but slowly over time, they will assimilate out of necessity. If it's only 10 of them at first, they're going to assimilate because it's 10 people in a town of 100,000. They're going to assimilate. And then if 10 people more come in, they'll say, and you can do this process, you know, bit by bit incrementally, and it could be effective. I don't think you should, and I don't think they'll ever fully assimilate. And I do think there's a racial component to this that is not overlooked by the left doing this on purpose because of the races involved. So there's that aspect. But regardless, you won't have somebody when there's 10 people from Somalia in Ohio. You're not going to get a Somalian going, I'm going to benefit Somalia and getting elected that way because, okay, maybe the 10 Somalians will vote for her, but the 999,990 non-Somalians will be like, what the hell are you talking about? No, I'm not going to vote for you. This only works if you drop in hundreds of thousands of people, give them all citizenship, then they have absolutely no need to even, you know, promote themselves to the non-Somali community. As long as they get that Somali community vote, they're in. Ilhan Omar is a congresswoman because of this program, because Somalis were dropped in a single district for this reason, to vote for her, to get her elected in a way that she doesn't have to even try to appeal to the non-Somalis because they make up just that large of a voting block. And of course, we know that in places like New Zealand, the Indian immigrants there are being blatant about this and are going, we're 20% of the population. We decide who wins the election. Serve us or we won't elect you. Why would we allow these people in? Or, putting it in a more accurate way, why would our rulers force this on us despite our opposition? Because they love us and just, you know, we don't understand how lovely Somalis are and we just have to be taught. No, they stole $100 billion and won't go home now. Everyone involved in this should be hung for treason. That includes Obama and anybody else involved in this. Every single person. Yes, Somalis can go home.
In the forbidden mountains of ancient China, Alex Jones, the warrior, returns to complete his training. His fists thunder against globalist lies. Each board he shatters destroys another New World Order deception. Forged in the fire of truth, he trains day and night. Iron palm strikes smashing through Big Pharma's walls. He prepares for the ultimate demon, Fentanyl the Dragon.
Oh, hello, Alex. It is I, Fentanyl the Dragon, your arch nemesis.
Fentanyl, you dare to return and face me?
Visit the AlexJonesStore.com today.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
America's worth saving. I seen this country build towns where there was nothing but dust and empty sky. Men worked sun up to sundown, built roads, railways, farms, and cities with their bare hands. People came here with nothing in their pockets and somehow carved out a life worth living. That's what made this place different. Not power, not money, freedom. And as long as there's still a few hard-headed Americans standing tall, America's story ain't over yet.
You
You can feel the noose tightening all across America. Fight the enemy before they hang freedom itself.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. Second hour of War Room already. We're not even done talking about the Haitians yet. Now we're going to stick to the discussion about the Supreme Court decision that, yes, in fact, we can get rid of people who are here on temporary protected status that was supposed to expire in 2011, or was it 2011, right? 18 months. Supposed to be an 18-month stay starting in 2010. Here we are in 2026 being told you are literally Hitler if you ask them to go home now. You can go home now, actually. Stephen Miller puts it at Stephen M on X. This may shock the media to hear, but for 99.999% of its history, there was not a Haitian TPS diaspora in Springfield, Ohio. The Democrats illegally airlifted the Haitian migrants to Springfield in the months before President Trump took office, in addition to the ones that had been here since 2010. So yeah, that's exactly what happened. And it's almost funny. Again, like the video that we played last week, where they're like, the Haitian diaspora is core to the identity of the state of Ohio. And it's just like, or the woman in the video that we showed, where she's just like, we built this country. You don't even speak English. You got here yesterday. What the hell do you mean you built this country? It's completely insane. And this is the type of stuff that's supposed to make us feel better. This is supposed to make us feel better, Olivia Jones. Olivia Jones, _06 on X, wrote, ICE is now deporting over 30,000 illegal immigrants every month. Raise your hand if you approve. Well, that sounds like a lot. 30,000? They're deporting 30,000? That's 1,000 a day. Here's the problem, though. During the Biden administration, on average, 200 to 300,000 migrants cross the border into America every month. So you are doing about 1/10 of what's necessary to just get back to where we were in 2020. I want to get back to where we were in 1950. So you're going to have to deport about 1 million people a month. And of course, that's only if we had been deporting 300,000 people a month since Trump first got into office. That would mean that we are on course to simply stabilize our population numbers back to where they were just before Biden got into office, rather. So from 2020 to 2024, every single month, 200 to 300,000 people came into this country. We're supposed to be satisfied with sending 1/10 of them back. But what happens when the Democrats take over? They all get citizenship. They all remain here forever. And then they all get to give visas to all of their families. And of course, we know, because we played the video last week as well, that there are some number of migrants literally just twiddling their thumbs in Mexico, waiting for a Democrat to get back in so they can come across, knowing that they won't be deported and won't be inconvenienced in the slightest. So I'm not approving of 30,000 illegal immigrants a month, a day, maybe. I mean, if you could do 30,000 a day, now we're talking. Now we might actually have some hope of getting this country back on its feet. But 30,000 a month, okay, great. So in 1 year, you'll have deported the same amount that came in a single month under Joe Biden. So if you just do that for about 100 years, well, what would that math be? 30,000 a month. How long would we have to do 30,000 a month to get back to 2020 population numbers? I think it'd be about 100 years to undo the damage they did to us in 4 years. So again, would it be hard to deport that number of people? Probably not. I think we could do it. If we could manage bringing them all in, I think we could manage getting them all out. I think it'd be easier, actually. Now we have their information. You know, they downloaded the app. But we chose not to. We chose to go to war with Iran instead. So there you go.
The info war is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the info war. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at RealAlexJones and on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. And don't forget to download the app. Go to AlexJonesApp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
All right, welcome back, folks. So yes, last week the Supreme Court did decide that temporary protected status initially given to Haitians in 2010, meant to expire in 2011, could in fact be allowed to expire here in the year of our Lord 2026. And after this probably unnecessary but very tedious and difficult to achieve victory, Republicans were quick to throw it all out of the window for some reason. For some inexplicable reason. I could guess. I mean, that might be a fun game, right? So the headline is, Mark Wayne Mullen, Haitians on TPS can seek legal status. Haitians who have been in the U.S. for years under TPS can apply for permanent resident status or for temporary visa, Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen said on Sunday. Appearing on CNN's State of the Union, Mullen defended the Trump administration's decision to end TPS for hundreds of thousands of migrants from Haiti and Syria. After the Supreme Court ruled the administration has the authority to terminate the program, Mullen said that TPS recipients can still apply for lawful permanent residence or temporary visas if they qualify, telling these individuals have a couple of choices. So I guess the question is, why would he say this? Why would he want them to stay? What is the point of winning this Supreme Court victory if you just go, yeah, but, you know, they can still stay. Actually, it's fine if they want to stay. And again, I cannot even remember the number of times this has happened in just this last, you know, the Trump administration. I mean, we can't get the SAVE Act passed for the life of us. Like, we cannot get anything that just our country needs to basically run on a basic level. We can't get done, can't have, you know, accurate vote counting or anything of the sort. Yes, Donald Trump was able to pardon the January Sixers, but then when a $1.2 billion fund came up to pay them for their pain and suffering they were subjected to illegally under the Biden administration's political persecution, it was the Republicans that stepped up and stopped it. The Republicans. So again, time and again, the regular Republican people, the regular American citizens, will fight and suffer and sacrifice and achieve victory for the Republican Party, and they literally just spit in our face. Not only do they not achieve what they're supposed to be achieving, which in and of itself would be frustrating but understandable if we lived in a totally communist system and you had really good, you know, nationalists up there just trying to do stuff and they just, you know, get, you know, bureaucratically stymied at every pass. Okay, I can understand that. They have no barrier to do what they want to do. The Republicans have absolutely no opposition that could fundamentally stop them from carrying these things out. They just don't do it. They don't want to. They don't care. It's incredibly frustrating. And so again, we went back first to 2010, and you can see Janet Napolitano giving temporary protected status, calling it a economic gift to Haiti, to the Haitians, because the Haitians here would be sending back money. And she's basically like, that's our money they're sending. So that's sort of a economic gift to them, admitting that this is not an economic benefit to America. Now it's being pitched as if it's like, but what would these companies do without Haitians to work the machines? The Haitians have been a crucial part of revitalizing Central Ohio. But no, originally it was pitched as this is economic resources for this failed state before they'd rewritten it. Hello, Alex.
Have you told people what you got caught doing?
I returned the hat, sir. I did.
Bigley only sent us two of these. I stole one. I've been wearing it. I wore it in today, and I said, Harrison, I noticed there was a hat in here. It's missing. I said, did you take it? And Harrison said, yes, sir, I cannot lie. That's how coveted these are at thealexjonesstore.com. That you may have it. Actually, I have Bigley sending us more. I does not. You like it.
I love it.
No, actually, and in fact, everybody takes the stuff they said of it after we've shown it. But the point is, this is very coveted.
It's
and
very
it does
cool.
fund the operation. I just want you to tell a story about your covetousness. This is, I present it to you.
I really did. Thank you very much.
You deserve it. You didn't actually steal it.
Well, thank you.
But I did. The point is, I knew when it was gone, you had to have it.
I did
and
check.
You have to have it and fund our operation if you want us to expand. We love you.
I did check. I made sure there were two because I didn't want to take the only one.
But see, I wanted one.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well,
I had to steal one.
And actually, as soon as I got home, my son saw it and was like, are those guns on that hat? I said, yeah. So now
I've already told Bigley, mail us more.
All right. Well, folks. You can you can be like us.
I just came in to be obnoxious. This wasn't planned. I'm being silly. You're kicking ass, by the way.
Thank you. Well, no, it's a great hat.
I was just on Eric Boland. He's like, why are you anti-Israel? And I said, I've never been anti-Israel. I'm anti-Netanyahu running our country. And I was right. And Trump admits he got lied to and says he's lost respect for them. And they're trying to control him. And that they better watch it. Nobody supports Israel now but us. I am of that camp. We were vindicated. Joe Kent was vindicated. We don't make that point enough to the neocons still attacking us, calling us Qatari agents.
100%. Yeah. And if they'd listened to us the whole time, we wouldn't even be in this situation. It'd be better for Israel.
Yeah, I want to deal with China and this. Big Tech and the left and Mondami. He was asking, well, are you for Mondami now? It's all like, are you for Mondami or for them? No, I don't want any people that want to run the country and don't see themselves as America first here.
100%.
Anyways, I didn't mean to interrupt. You're kicking ass.
Well, thank you, sir.
Seriously, folks, we're fundraising to hire more crew and expand. There's some badass 250th anniversary stuff. I said it's all limited edition. Some of this stuff's too good. It's not limited edition.
It'll last forever. But look.
I don't know why everybody loves it. I wore that out in public this week and I got like 10 comments.
It is a very cool hat. I don't know what it is either. It's classic. It's simple. Yeah, very simple. Got the two musket design. It's very high quality. The stitching is real. It's not just like a patch. That's all you can actually see here. If the crew can go to dot cam.
I apologize. No,
please, I get to talk more about this hat. You can actually see, I mean, you can see the stitching on the other side. It's not just a patch on top.
You want your son wants that?
He took it, yeah. My five-year-old is wearing it as we speak.
That's, make an ad out of that, though.
It's very cool. It's a very cool hat. And look, folks. You're going to be the stylish person at the 4th of July barbecue. That's all I'm saying. I want to see these hats seared with fireworks because of irresponsible celebration during July 4th. But I wasn't lying, folks. I really did take that. I did do it surreptitiously, though. On Friday afternoon, I picked the hat off the shelf and I looked around. And I said, okay, there's still a hat there, so I'm not taking the last one. And I left with it on my head.
Let me see.
I wasn't secretive.
I just caught you, American. No, you were like.
Exactly.
Mine! Thought your head would be bigger. Do not get this hat. Do not support the broadcast. Support Mondami.
Support Mondami, that's right.
You're going to get free bus fare, double bus fares.
You know, the whole, oh, you're against, you know, Israel killing kids, so you must be Muslim thing. You know, no one ever says that rock is on Scissor's side just because it doesn't like paper, right? It's okay to be like, I'm against them taking over. I'm against them taking over. I'm an American Christian. I would like to live in an American Christian country.
Are you in the Hells Angels or the Banditos? I'm like, I don't have a motorcycle.
And it is. It's divide and conquer, 100%. All right. Get the hat, folks. You can get the hat today. I think it's on discount, even though we could sell out of this thing without giving any discount at full price. And like I said, folks, I mean, pretty much any store you go in these days, whether it's a little local, you know, kitsch store, or you go in Walmart or Target or wherever, they almost all have a big display with their merchandise for America's 250th. They're doing it because they think they can make some money off you. We're doing it because this is our driving force. This is our our life. This is what we've dedicated ourselves to. The 250th anniversary to us is not just, you know, oh, let's rotate out the seasonal merchandise, you know, get rid of the pool stuff, move in the patriotic stuff. No, no. This is our lifeblood. This is what we truly believe. This is who we are. And if it's who you are too, you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. And, it depends on where you live, but you may still be able to get those delivered by July 4th so you can have it in time for the big 250th celebration. Okay. We're still talking about Haitians. We're still talking about the inability for Republicans to do anything that they promise for their people and seem like almost, it's like insulting. It's like insulting. It's like we finally win. Instead of going out and going, we got victory. TPS is canceled. You thought you could hook and crook and manipulate your way into citizenship. Not in this country. You're going to follow the law. We have laws for a reason. The Democrats have been trying to manipulate it and screw us over by their legalistic machinations for too long, and we're putting a stop to it now. There's right and there is wrong. These people were given temporary protected status. We didn't have to give that to them. This was a gift from us. This was a benefit we are not obliged to give, that we are not required to give, that we gave out of the goodness of our heart, because America is, at the end of the day, the most charitable nation in the history of the world. We're happy to lend a hand in trying times. That does not mean you then get to live here forever and take advantage of our goodness and then call us the bad guys when we decide that you've taken a little bit too much. You've taken enough now. We have to prioritize ourselves. For you to then criticize us for that, it's not just wrong, it's insulting. So yes, we're sending them back. Anybody with TPS orders right now, this is your warning. You have a year to get out, and if you're not gone, it's not just going to be sending you back to Haiti. You're going on a work chain. You're a chain gang. You're going to clean trash off the highway for a couple years to repay us for the beneficence that we showed you, that you took advantage of, felt no need to reciprocate whatsoever, and in fact felt robbed when we merely withdrew our endless and unqualified support of your third world nation. We don't get that. We don't get that speech. We don't get the triumph. We don't get to actually win in court and then put that into action. Every single time something like this happens, and it's happened multiple times in the last week, it's exactly the same cycle. What happened last week? The Supreme Court said, yes, we're getting rid of TPS. You can deport them. And Mayor Mamdani of New York City came out and said, no, we're not following that. I don't care if it's the Supreme Court law of the land. We're not only not going to comply, we're going to actively obstruct the enforcement of this. And then nothing happened. That was a week ago. I haven't heard about it since. So I guess that's what's happening now. Because whether it's DEI or protected status, whatever it is, it doesn't matter if the Supreme Court decides in our favor, because the Republicans refuse to actually enforce it. And the Democrats know that. And so they ignore it and do whatever the hell they want anyway. So I get, you know, what I can imagine now is probably 10 years from now, there will be another Supreme Court decision about temporary protected status. It'll be the same Haitians that are here today. They'll be here 10 years from now. And once again, we'll have to go through this whole rigmarole, just proving that we actually have the right to deport these people, and then they still won't get deported. So until we have actual tangible action to back up the victories, this doesn't mean anything. Now, it would mean something if we lost, because that's the way this works. That's just the way this always works. If we win in court, nothing changes, nothing happens. The Republicans themselves come in to hamstring us or cut our Achilles tendon the last second, even when there's no benefit to them. Just like, here's a $1.2 billion fund for your constituents, the victims of political persecution. And the Republican senators go, doesn't sound very fiscally conservative to me. No, thank you. No, I won't have the $1 billion to inject directly into my political machine. I think I'd rather stand on principle here. War with Iran, I'll take two. Thanks. This makes no sense. This makes no sense. This is retarded. So we went back in time and we showed you 2010 when Janet Napolitano assured us that they would all be gone by 2011. Then we showed you a clip from 2011 when the Republican congressman of Ohio was completely baffled and confused and like couldn't even understand that people were objecting to tens of thousands of the third world refugees being dropped in their neighborhood and given jobs. So let's go back and look at how things have gone since then. Let's go to clip number 29 here. This is the chief of police of Springfield, Ohio, talking about the unfolding, it's like a crisis spawn point. It's not just the crisis of Haitians. It's crisis upon crisis upon crisis, all created by the influx of Haitians. Let's watch.
You've got a city that's in absolute turmoil. Everybody's against everybody.
Chad Duncan is the police chief of Tremont City, Ohio, which is just outside of Springfield. He described a general atmosphere of lawlessness in Springfield, which he says is spreading to the surrounding area.
People that shouldn't be driving are out there and they're allowing them to drive.
Chief Duncan described one of his recent traffic stops involving a Haitian migrant.
He didn't even have a license, coming through town at 44 mile an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone. That's the second time in 2 weeks.
And you towed his car?
Oh yeah, towed for the second time.
And Springfield wouldn't have?
No.
He suggested that one reason Springfield authorities might be going soft on reckless driving is to protect the Haitians' immigration status.
If you get two misdemeanors, you are subject to be deported.
Since Springfield became a media sensation...
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in, they're eating the cats.
Chief Duncan says his access to Springfield's police radio frequencies was cut off.
What exactly was going on with that?
Well, we were able to hear them on the radio. They have decided to go silent. We don't know what's going on in the city. That happened the day they brought the state troopers in to help them out.
Why would you think they would make things hard to communicate?
Nobody can hear what you say, and they don't know what you're doing, so they'll have to answer to it. There was a threat at the school today. I couldn't hear it. I just caught wind of it from another guy, from another chief that's
something
right next to the city.
Right.
If they would have taken the time, instead of worrying about the elites lying in their pockets, and just took the time, this could have went so much smoother and been so much more beneficial to everybody involved. But instead...
And so because that didn't happen, how do you think this ends?
I really don't know what the end result will be, but right now it's not good.
The end result will be South Africa. I mean, that's where we're headed. I thought there were a couple really interesting parts of that. The first is the fact that he talks about that if you get two misdemeanors, you're then eligible for deportation. And so what should be happening is that all of these Haitians should be deported because they all keep committing misdemeanors. Only the city authorities go, you know, if we give misdemeanors to these guys, they get deported. So suddenly it becomes... Is it worth it to get, you know, this guy's going 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. Does he deserve to get deported for that? And it's like, well, yes, he does, because it's not necessarily even about the misdemeanor itself. It's about weeding out, incompatible immigrants that, like, if you can't manage to avoid the cops for 5 years while you're here on your best behavior, like, we don't need you. We don't need you. How often are you even given a misdemeanor ticket? I mean, it's not hard to avoid being pulled over or arrested by the cops. It's really not a difficult thing to do. I mean, these days in America, it's almost hard to get arrested in certain situations. But this is another thing where it's like you talk about the Haitians increasing the crime rate. The way that's interpreted by the leftist, the brainwashed idiot, is you therefore think black people are intrinsically and inherently criminal or something, right? It's always extrapolated out to be like, this is evidence that you are the worst person ever that wants everybody who's not white to burn in a painful death. And it's like, because I can read a chart? What are you talking about? Because I can say this line's bigger than this line, therefore I must hate all non-white people? Like, that's the extrapolation that occurs. But you can tell even in this, yeah, you could talk about the uptick in criminality with all other considerations eliminated, all other, you know, impacts into that status eliminated. And that would still probably exist because, well, and actually I've got a, I've got a story about this. I'll have to find it here. But it ties into everything that we always talk about. It's basically they do a test where they leave a wallet with money in it and they see who returns it. And it turns out the more likely you are to return the wallet with money, the more likely you are to be a success in life. There's a weird sort of correlation. So, you know, you can point to a third world nation that is the worst in the world by a lot of metrics. And you can go, is this because they are, you know, do not act in a moral way, or do they not act in a moral way because of their situation? It doesn't matter at a certain point. My point is, regardless of all of that, even if they were the most law-abiding people in the world, the system that they've been set up in incentivizes the local authorities not to punish them. When you don't punish criminals, they're incentivized to commit more and greater crime. If they're committing more and greater crime, and you know that you've covered up their crimes in the past and probably should have kept them out of the situation that got them in more trouble, you're even further incentivized to cover up their greater crime. So, even like, again, it has, taking all of the racial or even cultural stuff out of it, it's the American media landscape and political atmosphere that makes this such a ridiculous, nonsensical, inadequate, ineffective program to drop all these people off, to demand they conform to American laws, and then not punish them for that, and then actually go, well, if I give them a misdemeanor ticket, they'll be deported, so I'm not going to give them a misdemeanor ticket. I assume you'll never give them a misdemeanor ticket. So now they just have a license to speed, and they'll know that even if they get pulled over, the cops will be too scared to actually run the ticket. The way it should work is that none of these things should be a consideration. If the law is two misdemeanors, they get deported, then that's the law, and that's what should happen. But time and time again, and again in every single instance, you would see this, where if it's a Somali that just, like, speeds every day and has gotten in multiple car accidents, caused all this trouble, you'll still have a cop be like, but, you know, I'm not going to write him a ticket because I don't want the man to get deported. The poor guy. But then if you have, you know, a actual white American Ohio native, do you think he would have even the slightest concern? You know, if it was some girl, it's like, oh, I already have 2 points on my license. If I get a ticket here, I'm going to lose my license. I won't be able to go to work. I'm going to lose my house. I mean, I know I was going five over, but like, is it? And they'll just be like, well, should have thought out that before speeding, you know? There'll be no consideration for the native birth American, you know, heritage American. There'll be no, you know, leniency for any of us, only for them. And they know it, and they take advantage of it, and their kids know it, and they take advantage of it. And by the way, now, the powers that be, like, if you want to know where the New World Order is going, look at what Mark Carney is doing. Mark Carney in Canada just came out with a video where he says, we're not a melting pot, we're a mosaic. So the powers that be in Western countries, in Western white countries, are now no longer even saying melting pot, because that actually implies assimilation. It has now become a mosaic. So they're now telling immigrants, come over here, behave in the same way you did back home, import your same culture, create a little colony inside Canada. You're not supposed to melt. You're not supposed to become Canadian. Canada is now a meaningless term referencing a mosaic. In other words, just a collection of totally disparate, unconnected people competing with each other. What a wonderful nation. Is that a nation?
I don't sell crap. Bovine colostrum. I'll get back to news. I didn't do any plug in the first hour. And Bigly, about a year ago, puts out a survey. A lot of you that are, you know, if you're a VIP, you get surveys. And, you know, once a month or something, they'll ask, hey, what are you wanting, or what are you liking best, or what products would you like? That's smart to ask customers that, right? And you're kind and you tell us, and it came back. Bovine colostrum was in the top two or three every time, and so was high-grade beef tallow, which we now have for you as you requested. And it's a great seller. Not rocket scientist to ask your customers what they want. That's the number one rule of sales. Well, have a great product and find out what your customer wants. You can say the customer's always right. I think there's something better I'm going to tell you, but I'm not going to argue with it. But that's an important rule of sale, but I don't think it's the most ethical point. I'll actually tell you what I think I need to know. So we got samples of it in before we even private labeled it from a top place to say, hey, you got to try this. Well, and now I'm taking it because I know how good it is. I'm like, okay, the survey wants bovine colostrum, the first milk of 2 weeks out of a mammal. I know it supercharges the immune system. I know it has all these immunity factors that goes in. It's like the natural vaccine. I know it's great. I know that going back to Germany hundreds of years ago in the UK and even out west here in the US, they had a sickly kid or a preemie. They would give them the colostrum. They would call it the first milk of a donkey. It's like always in all the literature, like the medical doctors like that. Oh my God, donkey. Donkey colostrum is like, whoa, man. I mean, like that, donkey. And then horse is good. Goats are good, but it's always donkey's the best. It says, the first 2 weeks milk, the colostrum of a genie. That's in medical books from Germany, the UK, the US. That's how powerful colostrum is. Well, we don't have big, creameries and dairies with a bunch of female donkeys. So you're going to have to settle with the cow. But it's good. And so they send in the canister of the company we're going to private label it from. And I'm like, okay. And so I throw it in the back of my car with some other stuff. And a couple days later, I go to have dinner at my parents. And I go, hey, my mom takes, I've seen her take colostrum and stuff. It was women like their hair and their nails and all that. I'll give her this. So I go in and give her a couple canisters of it and everything. And then about 2 months later, my mom is like, Alex, I want some more of that. That is incredible.
Several weeks later.
Mom, you got to listen. The products are amazing.
Well, this one, like I said, I don't do testimonials. There's a lot of good products, but this is the first one that I can go, whoa. It's in a back problem that I've had since Alex was born. It's almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turned darker.
And darker.
So now she gets it from us. She orders it from us. But that just gives you an example of I'm not selling crap, okay? I'm not going to sell you something that doesn't work. Now, with colostrum, it's going to take, you're going to feel it right away in a few days, but it's going to take months for you to see it with the skin and the hair and the nails and all that for it to really kick in. But I'm telling you, you are nuts if you don't go to the alexjonesstore.com and get these right now. Just go get it. And then we can expand and have our legal battles and beat the New World Order, and you'll be as happy as a pig in poop. And there's a bunch of sales on all the best-selling products right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I can't be bought. I am simply funded by you if you like the work we're doing.
Nice try, globalist, but Alex Jones is still here, and he's not leaving. Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. Make sure you're following us. You can follow Alex at Real Alex Jones. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. Follow at AJN Live. And, of course, watch us on Rumble. I got so many videos to go to, so much more to talk about today. We've been through half the show basically just talking about the Supreme Court decision about temporary protected status. There are some other Supreme Court decisions I want to talk about, but I've got so many good videos about this. And again, just sort of laying out that, like, this outcome that we're currently experiencing was imminently predictable 15 years ago when TBS was first being promoted. But people who were sounding the alarm about it were demonized and shouted down and called bigots by their very own Republican congressmen who now seem to understand the threat that's being posed, but still refuse to act on it or do anything that they are now confirmed by the Supreme Court allowed to do to expel some of these people. We're supposed to celebrate 30,000 deportations a month. when 10 times that number came in every month during Biden's term in office. And you have people like this, Mehdi Hasan, 3 days ago, says, quote, great replacement is a literal neo-Nazi conspiracy theory. Then 2 days later, maybe the Europeans should have thought about that, about all that back when they were colonizing Africa in the 19th century. So it's a neo-Nazi conspiracy theory that's also completely true and revenge for improving your countries 200 years ago. You know, one of our ancestors taught one of Mehdi Hasan's ancestors to use a fork, and he hasn't forgiven us since. Genocide is required to repay the crime of building railroads, I guess. And you just got to understand, like, maybe they're not all like this. Probably not all of them. But what percentage of people, and, you know, Mehdi Hasan, he's a smart dude. He knows what he's doing. He's not, you know, some crazy socialist in college or something. He's like a prominent political person. And even he, you know, he's just like, yeah, I'm going to call you a Nazi for knowing about the Great Replacement, but I believe in the Great Replacement, and I think it's good as payback against white people for colonization. So he shouldn't be in this country. So he should be forcibly expelled from the country. And if he doesn't like it, he can cry about it. But why are we obligated to just allow this guy to subvert our country from our country in the name of our country? Great Replacement is a literal neo-Nazi conspiracy theory. But also, in response to Jason Lawler saying in 20 years, it'll just be France's Africans playing against Spain's Africans in the, to play Italy's Africans in the finals. He says maybe the Europeans should have thought about that all the way back when they were colonizing Africa in the 19th century. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe we should have thought about that. I wonder what white people would have done differently back then. Probably would have been a lot less nice. That's for damn sure. They probably should have thought about that before we gave these people medicine, food. I don't think that's the point he was trying to make. I don't think that's the point Mehdi Hasan was trying to make exactly. But yeah, no, we definitely should have thought about that. But I also love that tweet. I've been saying that forever, even before I was working at InfoWars. I'd always wanted to make a skit. Nobody else ever thought it was as funny as me. But I always thought it'd be funny to do a future skit about the Olympics where it's just, you know, the marathon is just all Kenyans in different national uniforms. And then, like, just like, what is the point of that? I mean, the Olympics are a beautiful thing. And like, it is, it's one of these things I've talked about with the World Cup or anything else. It's like, okay, France's Africans are playing in Sweden, Swedish uniformed Africans, which wouldn't make much sense, except you look at the crowds cheering at home and what do you know? They're all Africans. So what are we doing here? Like, the idea of the World Cup, of the Olympics, it really is a beautiful thing if you adhere to the actual definition of the word nation, which has to do with your birth, right? Same root word as natal, nature, nation. It's your family. It's your extended family. So how cool is it when you get to see, like, the best German whatever compete against the best Ghanaian whatever, and you get to see the differences and style? Like, that's what I love about the World Cup when it was the World Cup. I didn't even watch the World Cup this time because it literally is just like, where are the Frenchmen? It's just a bunch of black Africans. Like, these, they aren't French. They might speak the French language. They might wear the French uniform, but I like seeing families of people compete against each other, celebrating each other's victories and differences and genuine diversity. I don't want to see a Kenyan in an American uniform, a Kenyan in a French uniform, and a Kenyan in a Dutch uniform, you know, fighting to the last to get that gold medal. It's like, who cares? These actual global international events are actually a beautiful idea. And the last World Cup I watched, it was specifically the German and Ghanaian team, the team from Germany and the team from Ghana playing against each other. And it was totally fascinating because it was like the German team were German. They were like a well-engineered machine, just like passing the ball with precision, always keeping it moving, just like very tactical, very, I don't even understand soccer, but I could appreciate the tactics, the strategy, the fundamentals that went into it. The Ghanaian players were just like the strongest players you'd ever seen, and they would just boot the ball across the entire field and get a goal. So it turned out they were actually kind of evenly matched. And it was actually fun to watch the two different characters of these two different nations competing against each other and seeing where one style works versus the other. One is not better than the other. Even whoever wins the ball game, it's not a moral judgment on you as a person. It's just a cool, fun human experience to see the very German mechanical, industrial, like playing the game versus the gun and just like boom and just hitting his heart. You know, that's cool. That's fun. That's human. That's very exciting. What is exciting about globalist versions of this? What is exciting about watching the little Chinese girl from America, the little Chinese girl from France, and the little Chinese girl from China all competing to be the best Chinese gymnast? You know, it's just like, what? Who cares? Who cares? So, like, that to me is very, like, I don't understand how people don't rebel at the way things are going. Even with the NFL and stuff, even that used to be, like, why are the team names what the team names are? It used to be connected to something real. Houston was the Oilers because they were in the oil business. Green Bay are the Packers because there was a big packing business, meat packing business there. That was the big industry. So it was the Steelers, the steel mills in Pennsylvania. Again, how cool is that? That's like, all right, we're going to get the best football playing steel mill workers and we're going to pit them against the best football playing oil field workers. And we're going to see who's better, the oil field workers or the steel workers. That's fun. And hey, these are our guys from Pittsburgh. These are Pittsburgh boys. The Pittsburgh boys are going to kick the butts out of the Houston boys. Like, that's cool. Now it's like, what connection? What connection do you have to your team, to even the name of the team, let alone the players that almost certainly grew up 1,000 miles away, played for some, you know, school team you don't cheer for. But hey, now the foreign owner of your team paid the most for him, so he's yours now. It's just like, does anybody ever get sick of just these things that once had meaning, had a tangible connection to the real world, just being replaced by the placebo facsimile version of them? Anybody ever get tired of this? Anyway, we go on and on. But at the end of the day, it's all about destroying the cultures that uphold individual resistance to tyranny, resistance to coercion or compulsion. And this is the important part. This is why these types of discussions for us always come back to this, because at the end of the day, there is a difference between our moral framework and theirs. The American belief system, the American morality, is different and better than other moralities. And it's, these things are not even. These things are not equivalent. These things are not swappable. If you swap a bunch of people with American morality who grew up in American culture with American beliefs, if you swap them out with somebody from Somalia, they are not going to all of the sudden, by virtue of the magic dirt, suddenly start comporting themselves in a way that is aligned with American sensibilities. They're going to behave in their own way, which is worse than ours, which is not as good as ours. And by the way, let me put this out there. People who have bad intentions are treating what's going on with the Somalis and the Haitians as if this is a race thing. I think, in fact, this could be a fantastic opportunity for racial cohesion, racial allyship here in America. You know what black Americans don't do? They don't eat cats and dogs, folks. The Haitians do that. Is this not somewhere where we can reach across the aisle, black and white together. We can join hands as Americans and say, let's get rid of these damn Haitians. These people suck. Don't you agree? And the other person's like, yeah, they eat cats and dogs. Let's get them the hell out of here. This is America. This is nationalism solving the racial issue. I'm not against Haitians because they're black. I'm against them because they're foreigners. And we can all get on board of that, can't we? Is this not a well-known... I mean, do me a favor. See if you can find what, like, ghetto black people have to say about Haitians. Do you think there's a lot of racial solidarity there? Or do you think they think they're freaks and also want them out of the country? This could be a great opportunity for religious solidarity here in this country. Black and white Americans can all come together, put our differences aside, join hands, and hate Christians and Somali illegal immigrants together. Together, we can make this happen. We can make it possible. We need each other in this. We need each other. We need black people to let everybody know it's not, in fact, racist to want to protect your country from incursions by hostile outside third world forces. And the black people need the white people for the sheer scale of our population to get this stuff done. We need this. We, together, arm in arm, hand in hand, we can make America great again. But you cannot let the lefties convince you that you have anything in common with a bunch of weirdo Haitians that are here for all your stuff. Our stuff. Our collective stuff they're trying to steal. And we collectively should stop them. Let's go now to clip number 18 here. This is, again, locals there in Springfield, Ohio. We're not very happy about who's benefiting from the Haitian migrant population. Let's watch.
What's happening in Springfield? A Haitian invasion.
How many Haitians do you think have been sent here?
20,000. That's what they're saying.
And who pays for their housing?
Government assistance. You know, some of them do work. You know, the way I understand it, you know, a lot of them work at Dole, and Dole's paying for their houses. The staffing place on High Street, they said they was paying them like $12.50 an hour. So.
Did Springfield's residents used to work at Dole, and now they...
Yes. Yes.
So have they lost their jobs to Haitians?
Yeah, a lot of them has. And then, you know, we're supposed to call them visitors and neighbors, whatever. You know, if you start talking about them, you're supposed to be nice. And we talked to a lady a couple nights ago, and she said if she wasn't nice about it, you know, nice to them and talk about them nice, she could lose her job over it.
So you're supposed to call the Haitians visitors?
Yes. Neighbors, visitors.
Neighbors, visitors.
Freedom of speech. We can call them whatever we want. You know, the past 4 years they've been coming in here, but within the last 6 to 8 months, they've really come in.
Really?
I guess they're trying to get them all over here before Trump gets in office. And, you know, with the rumors about the ducks and the geese, I mean, I've never seen them with one, but they thinned out the population real good.
Fact checkers love to say this is fake, but the thing is, it's true. Dole Fresh does have a facility in Springfield, Ohio, and it has employed Haitian immigrants. They do things like pack ready-to-eat salads and more. Local reporting even confirms, but the company itself denies the specific number of Haitians, and this is the big one. They deny details on their immigration status. There is only one reason to deny details on immigration status, and that is because you're hiring the illegals that the Biden admin dumped in there. If we take a look at what the minimum wage is in Ohio, it's $11 an hour. The claim is that they're getting hired at just above that. And if they had to pay American citizens, an American citizen would make an average of about $15 to $22 in Ohio. So by importing all these Haitians, Democrats were able to help out their transnational companies by giving them minimum wage cheap foreign labor so they don't have to pay Americans $22 an hour. And then they get the votes from these people. It's a win-win.
Yeah, everybody wins except for the American people. The transnational corporations win. Their stakeholders in the stock market win. The Haitians win. The NGOs importing the Haitians win. The government operatives who get to celebrate the immense amount of money they've given away as if that's a metric for success. They get to win the, again, multinational corporations that aren't just hiring the Haitians, but are the ones like Coca-Cola or Pepsi Frito-Lay who benefit from the fact that the food stamps these people will be receiving can be spent on their products. It benefits everybody except for the American people, the town, Ohio, Springfield, or any of us. But yeah, everybody else is taking advantage of us, stealing from us, disadvantaging us for their own advantage. And we don't need to allow it. And there's no reason to allow it. There is no benefit to allow any of this. Even those things you could categorize as benefits are not actually beneficial. In other words, you could say that Dole is probably saving some money on doing this, but like, what is the ultimate goal of Dole? Is it to maximize the amount you're squeezing out from a collapsing, dying economic zone? Or do you want to actually have a customer base to continue to sell to into the future that's being eliminated because a couple decades from now, it's going to be nothing but food stamps and dependence as the feedback loop continues? Let's go to clip number 33 here. This woman absolutely nailed it. I'm not even sure. I'll have to find her name. This was posted by Ryan Dawson. And you can search that out. I'll find her actual name, though, but she absolutely kills it. Okay, Catherine Birbalsing. I'm not sure, but she's dead on the money. Let's watch.
Any young person, what history they learned at school, and they'll tell you, Hitler. Ask them what else. Slavery. Ask them what else. American civil rights. In fact, what little they know of history will be all about black and brown people fighting for equality against the white man. Women fighting men for the vote. Gay and trans people fighting for various rights. Our young people have been taught that history is simply one long story about various groups struggling under the oppressive dead white man. Out with Dickens, Shakespeare, Kipling, and Wordsworth.
She is going hard.
History is taught through an oppressor lens. The triangular slave trade, white men held the power. What about Britain ending the slave trade? More than a quick mention, if at all? No. What of the Arab slave trade that lasted three times as long as the triangular slave trade? No. Okay, so GCSE history in Britain is often taught as migration through time. So the idea that Britain has always been a land of immigrants is embedded in our children's heads. Most schools would prefer to concentrate learning about the tiny number of black people who existed in Tudor England over a thorough analysis of England's break from Rome. Medieval history becomes her story and is told through the eyes of Eleanor of Aquitaine because, after all, she was a woman. Ooh. Not to mention weeks on King Mansa Musa of Mali because he was a black Muslim. His bearing on British institutions, laws, and faith is non-existent. And the fact that he is said to have been the richest man in history, thanks in part to his massive slave-owning society,
yes,
is a detail somehow that teachers rarely ever teach. But it isn't just our schools. It's our general culture, too. Take your kids to a museum or an art gallery in any Western country, and you'll find the same narrative. As an example, when learning about aviation in London's Science Museum and the extraordinary feat that is man making massive machines move in the sky, a write-up on the wall explains that women and black people were historically barred from aviation schools and the military. Similarly, James Watt, the man who invented the steam engine and is considered the founder of the Industrial Revolution, has a write-up on the wall explaining that his early career involved slave trafficking with a bonus analysis of the whole of Britain's complicity in the slave trade. They flatten the entire human story and all of its complexities into the narrative of oppressor and oppressed.
Absolutely incredible. You can follow her at Miss_Snuffy on X. White people are tired of being seen as racist. If white guilt permeates the online world in our schools, and our adults will feel guilty too. This helps neither whites nor ethnics. My ARC speech. Again, she's exactly right. And by the way, Mansa Musa, do we need to do a whole show on him? This is a guy, I'm not sure where this, it must have been like a BuzzFeed article or something. It must have been like, the richest people in the world. You'll have no idea who number one is. It's Mansa Musa. More than 10,000 Haitians in Massachusetts workforce, many filing crucial jobs, long-term care, construction, transportation, will lose their temporary protected status. Okay, bye. Bye. By the way, we've covered it. Dole is a member of the TENT program. Once again, if you don't understand, these corporations will import people. They will lobby to have the law changed to allow them to import people. If that doesn't work, they'll import people anyway. They will pay for these people's homes. They will pay for their child care. They will pay for their living expenses. They will pay for the lawyers to argue for them in immigration court. They will pay all of that on top of the salary that they're paying them for jobs, and yet it's still beneficial to them. They still prefer to do that over just hiring an American citizen. An American citizen who needs no extra expenditure for a place to live. They do not require your company to provide you child care. They're not provide you, they don't require lawyers to be provided. They don't provide days off. They don't require days off work to go make arguments in immigration court. These are all benefits that companies are happy to give illegal immigrants, because apparently saving $2 an hour on wages makes it all work out, or they're willing to lose money in their actual mission, which is to destroy the United States through corporate machinations and coercion. Just like how they're willing to lose money selling trans bathing suits at Target because BlackRock tells them to, or that Hollywood will lose money destroying beloved intellectual properties rather than make a movie that stars a white guy. Maybe they would rather lose money because the actual ultimate goal for them is the destruction of our country, because they're in on it in full awareness of what the effects are going to be to the American people and the fabric of the American culture. We'll be back on the other side with the third hour. We're actually going to start with a clip from Catherine Austin Fitz, who I believe is the first person I've ever seen make the same connection I have been desperately trying to tell people forever, which is that the reason the New World Order is ramping up these days is because they feel like they're on the cusp of infinite life. I've been sounding this alarm and framing this narrative this way for years. Finally, Catherine Austin Fitz is one who seems on my same level here. I'll show you that clip on the other side, and then the third hour. Stay tuned. It's War Room Live.
And a back problem that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turned darker.
And darker.
And I've told the story. My mother never wants to go on TV, but she did last year. Look, your dad was completely bald. I'm not kidding. And now all this hair is coming in. And hair that was gray started, she showed me at the restaurant. You've seen it. It's coming in brown. It is buy one, get one free until tomorrow night at midnight central at thealexjonesstore.com.
Even on Colostrum now, too much. And we have the very best at thealexjonesstore.com. And I'm serious. So. Mom, you got to listen. The products are amazing.
Well, this one, like I said, I don't do testimonials. There's a lot of good products, but this is the first one that I can go, whoa, it really. You put that
on. Tell us what happened.
I have been on Colostrum for about 2 or 3 months, and a back problem that I've had since Alex was born is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this
It's brand new.
Turn darker.
Ask ChatGPT what it's known to do. Upper respiratory tract infections and symptoms reduction. Attenuation of exercise-induced immune suppression. Antiviral and antibacterial effects. Stopping leaky gut. Support for gastrointestinal disorders, which is the whole body. Enhanced recovery and reduced inflammation. Metabolic health, wound healing, and tissue repair. It is bovine colostrum. It is buy one, get one free at theyellowstonestore.com, and it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
I think the master plan is to implement total control and to run a society with two sets of rules, one for a small group of oligarchs. So I don't know if you ever saw the interview after Jared Kushner left the first Trump administration. He gave an interview and he said, given what's happening in biotech, I'm going to be the first generation to live forever, the last generation not to live forever.
I think that there's a good probability that my generation is, hopefully with the advances in science, either the first generation to live forever or the last generation that's going to die.
I just had one of our subscribers meet, have dinner with Steve Wolfram, and Wolfram was saying it doesn't matter that we do the digital control grid, because if you look at what AI can do with biotech, we can live forever.
You know, if we look at sort of what the important developments that might happen in the future are, probably the one that's going to be sort of the biggest discontinuity in human history is when human immortality is achieved, which it undoubtedly will be. How will it be achieved? There are two basic paths. It's either, technology and electronics and so on, or it's biology.
So now, you can't let 8 billion people live forever because you're going to have an environmental problem. So you have one group of people who apparently think they're going to live forever. And then you have another set of rules for everybody else. And you want to put them on a trajectory to steadily decline in terms of number of population. So I think you're looking at a very long-term plan to reduce the population and create a two-class society where you have, the oligarchs and then everybody else. And the oligarchs are free of having to manage everybody else, one, because they have complete control, but they can turn it over to AI and let the AI do it. And then when things go wrong, they can just blame the AI. It wasn't me, it was the AI.
Well, a Malthusian society and that vision, I believe, is something that, has been pushed by the likes of Bill Gates, who's buying up all the farmland in the United States. And again, just to play devil's advocate here, when you speak of these oligarchs, like, who are they? What evidence convinces you, that this is a coordinated effort rather than the natural evolution
of tech and financial systems? I used to live and work with them.
It's amazing. I think I've got the best FHA commissioner in the history of HUD. It's the first woman commissioner in the history of HUD. And I'm very proud that the Bush administration was able to attract someone of Austin Fitz's talent off of Wall Street to come down and help us. And she's an expert in financing.
So, I lived in that world. And I watched them become more and more alienated.
Who is them?
So it's the people who run the financial system. At any given time, it's 100 to 1,000 people who run the different key spots in the banks, the insurance companies, the central bank, and the treasury. And if you look at, and that system is very much done by consensus through all these different groups and meetings and everything else, very organic. And, but I saw them reach a wide consensus that you couldn't trust the average person to behave in a responsible way. And, and so you had to assert more central control. And essentially by giving people lots of consumer attention and choice, move them out of having any political say whatsoever. So you wanted to reduce them to the point where their vote or their participation in the political system didn't mean anything. But you wanted to do it in a way where you could persuade them to take all their capital and invest it in a way that you could use it to build in the direction you wanted to build.
Well, the stock market is telling you, the most highly valued companies are AI companies. AI is going to be, if you want to be cynical, which I am, the market is telling you that the most valuable stocks are the ones that are building the digital prison.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's the only growth in the country at the moment is the building of the digital prison. Think about that for a second.
Jeez.
That's it. The growth in the sectors are building our future enslavement. That's where the last bit of growth is coming from.
So right now, you know, if I go to a meeting with people who are trying to stop the control grid and trying to stop a data center, I can get them to pull out their portfolios and I can show them they're financing the very data centers they're trying to stop.
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at RealAlexJones and on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final hour of War Room Live. Got a lot more videos to show you still. Let's go over some of the other Supreme Court decisions. Supreme Court rules geofence warrants require constitutional privacy protection. So this is actually very good news, in my opinion. Good decision. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that law enforcement's use of sprawling warrants that sweep up smartphone location data requires privacy protections under the Fourth Amendment in a boost to critics who view their use as an unconstitutional dragnet. Justice Elena Kagan wrote the majority opinion, which held the sensitive data scooped up by geofence warrants counts as Fourth Amendment search and offers individual a reasonable expectation of privacy, even if they may be in a public area. An individual has a reasonable expectation of privacy in records about his cell phone's location, and police intrude on that constitutionally protected interest when they demand the information, even though for a limited time, and from a third-party tech company. So again, that's very good to see, and good to know. And it's not like it's helping, right? It's not like they're actually using this information to better make Americans safer. They're using it to, I don't know what, do a lot of other stuff, but it's certainly not helping keep anybody safer ever. And there was a, I don't know if I have it here, but I just thought about it, and it was a picture showing that the city in which Savannah Guthrie's mother was kidnapped is basically covered in flock cameras. So it's just like, okay, so you couldn't help a kidnapping victim, even though the entire city is covered in flock cameras, but you want to put them everywhere for our safety. There's an incompatibility here. There's a disjointed aspect of this that should probably be repaired. Justices expand presidential powers over regulation, but not the Fed. In twin rulings, the justices on the Supreme Court said President Trump could fire independent regulators for any reason, but explicitly affirmed the Fed's independence and said its leaders could not be fired at will, which is kind of awkward when you have this pseudo-governmental, actually private bank conglomerate called the Fed printing all your money. Seems like the elected representatives of the United States should have a say in that, but of course we don't because of the trick that was pulled on us in 1913 that we've been incapable of undoing ever since. The justices, meanwhile, struck down a precedent aimed at curbing political influence at some agencies, but did not give Trump the same power over the Fed. In a 6-3 ideologically divided decision, the justices struck down a nearly century-old precedent that has allowed Congress to insulate the leaders of the Federal Trade Commission and roughly two dozen other independent regulatory agencies from political influence by requiring the president to have good reasons to dismiss them. The ruling is likely to usher in major changes to the structure of the federal government, and it fulfills a major goal of the Trump administration and many conservatives who have long argued that the president should exercise nearly unfettered authority over the executive branch. And this is, it's a big win. Trump calls it a big win. I just have trouble seeing anything as a win these days. I mean, that's just where I'm at, where it's like, okay, maybe in another situation, I would see this as good, but, you know, Trump just put in the son-in-law of the president of the World Jewish Congress to run the Fed. So I'm like, do I even want Trump having unfettered control over this? It seems like that just means giving a very select cabal of Israeli billionaires total control. I don't even feel like I'm giving Trump anything. It just feels like Trump is a puppet. So congratulations to the Kushners for, you know, being able to fire FTC people at will. And a decision, this decision is, so the headline says, Supreme Court okays late arriving mailed ballots and loss for Trump. The Supreme Court on June 29th said Mississippi can count late arriving mail-in ballots, handing a defeat to President Donald Trump, who's trying to curtail voting by mail. And this is one of these situations where it's like, vote by mail shouldn't be a thing. If it's a thing, then yeah, I guess you have to make some allowances for the fact that you're not in charge of when your ballot gets delivered. Because, like, I understand the reasoning behind this. The reasoning is, if you accept mail-in ballots, it's not the person's fault. I mean, I'm sure it's happened to you. It certainly happened to me, where you send a package, and it doesn't usually happen with FedEx or, you know, a private business. But with U.S. Postal Service, I mean, I've gotten Christmas packages that arrived in February, right? Things will just go missing for weeks on end. And then it gets delivered like nothing ever happened. You check the post date and you're like, this was sent in December and I just got it in February. What the hell? So I can understand how it's unfair that, hey, I put my ballot in the mail. I sent it in and the postal services didn't deliver it. That's not fair. Okay. It took the postal service two extra weeks to get it. Now my vote doesn't count because the postal service is incompetent. So I understand the reasoning why you would have to allow late arriving ballots as long as they were postmarked by election date. The thing is, we shouldn't have mail-in ballots. So, like, that's the issue here. The issue is we're trying to cobble together a rule set to fulfill a function that never should have happened. We never should have opened up mail-in ballots for every single person or every single country, state rather. Legally, it shouldn't have ever happened, because in order to change the laws in that way, you're supposed to do it through the legislature, but this was done by fiat, by the secretaries of state. Total violation of the rule of law and the way these things are supposed to happen. Then you have people like Mark Zuckerberg giving tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to fund this whole program. None of this should be happening. None of this should have to go to the Supreme Court, because there shouldn't be mail-in ballots to any sizable amount. It should be people overseas who are on deployment in the military. There should be military ballots, which you can handle in an entirely different structure with its own social service and everything. I mean, a postal service and everything. And for, like, maybe the 1,000 people that know they're not going to be in town, and so they make arrangement to vote when they're not actually in the city. Yeah, he gave nearly $500 million to get Biden elected by getting mail-in ballots. So it's like, okay, this is a defeat for Trump, but really the defeat for Trump is that mail-in ballots still exist. The Republicans won't pass the SAVE Act. The House Majority Leader in the Senate won't fire the... There's like this character that's like the Senate parliamentarian. and it was somebody who was appointed by Obama and just runs the Senate. And it just, it doesn't matter who we vote for, and it doesn't matter who even the leadership in the Senate, what they want to do, the parliamentarian just decides what they do. We don't even know who this person is. They never had to run for their position. They've been there for like 20 years. And apparently we can't get things done because this appointment, this position that just is supposed to be a functionary, is supposed to be there just to, like a robot, just like making sure the rules are followed, won't allow Republicans to table things that should be voted on. It's just this whole system is screwed. This whole system is screwed up. We shouldn't, it's very similar to the, this woman, Elizabeth McDonough. It's similar to a lot of other stuff that's happened recently where it's like, we shouldn't even, like the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment was written during a time in which white Europeans were the only ones who could become citizens. So it was written to make up for a condition that doesn't exist anymore. And yet we're still deciding things on the 14th Amendment. It's not, it shouldn't be valid because it shouldn't exist. Other laws have passed since then that make the Fourth Amendment unnecessary and counterproductive. But like we retain it for some reason. It's crazy. Like it shouldn't exist at all. I'm not going to be excited one way or the other of how the Supreme Court decides. It shouldn't be a thing they're deciding on. It shouldn't exist. Mail-in ballots shouldn't exist. It doesn't really matter to me whether, I mean, certainly this will make it easier for them to cheat. Certainly it's not hard to understand how if you can put the vote by mail ballots in after you've already collected and counted all of the votes that came in person, it's like impossible to not screw that system up. Like, why wouldn't they? So obviously I disagree with the decision, but I disagree with the law the decision is even discussing. It's not even a law. It's not even a thing that happened. This is what I really don't understand. If the Supreme Court is going to decide something about mail-in ballots, shouldn't it decide whether or not the mail-in ballots were lawfully created? Because they weren't. And it's not even a debate. It's like the Constitution, just about every state says changes to the voting system must be made through the legislature. During COVID, they just said, it's an emergency. We're the Secretary of State. We're doing mail-in ballots. Mark Zuckerberg designed the system for us, and they just did it. Totally illegal. But if no one stops them, nobody punishes them, if you count the votes and then accept the results, then I guess that's what they get to do. They call it a grace period. U.S. court endorses grace period for mail-in ballots. So that's what I mean. It's like, okay, yeah, I guess you do need a grace period if you have this retarded, ridiculous, incompetent system that's impossible to verify who actually won the election. Then, yeah, I guess you have to make some allowances for that. But it shouldn't exist. So can the Supreme Court tell us that? That'd be nice. That'd be something worth something. And if we can't secure our elections, then what is the point of any of this? Because, you know, it's not fun to have to fight like this constantly. It's not fun to have to, like, literally constantly be on your guard against a whole array of vicious elements trying to do whatever they can to destroy you. It really sucks. And in a way, it's almost like if we just accept that our system is screwed, like, I'd almost rather be in a country like the Soviet Union, where just everybody knows that everything is corrupt and that there's no ability for you to stop it. It's almost just frustrating and annoying that we're still dangled the possibility that we could correct things electorally. I think it's pretty clear now with the way the Republicans are being, it's not ever going to happen. We're not going to get deportations. We're not going to get even a functional electoral system, despite the fact that we voted for that and we won. You'd think in a democracy that's what would happen, but that's just not happening. So in a way, it's almost just like, can we just accept? And so we just go about our business and just deal with it. I'm saying this facetiously, obviously, but it's so unbelievably frustrating knowing that the people in office right now have more than enough power to solve all of this, and they just won't do it. Let's go to Tina Peters here now, clip number 10. Here's her talking about how to secure elections, as if anybody needed to be told this, right? As if any of this even needs to be discussed. It's like, if you're going to have voting, then the voting system has to be secure. Duh. How are you going to have voting if the voting system isn't secure? If you're going to have mail-in ballots, you're not going to have a secure system. So if you're going to have mail-in ballots, you're not going to have a secure system, meaning you're not going to be able to actually know who you voted for and who actually won. So this whole thing is pointless anyway. But it's like, it's just one of these things that's like, okay, now let's listen to the expert firefighter tell us that water puts out fire. It's like, this is all obvious. This is all obvious, okay? It's not hard to secure an election system. It's just hard to secure an election system when half your country is Democrats and they don't want a secure election system because their power is derived entirely by fraud. Here's Tina Peters.
We don't need to, there's so much proof out there. We don't need to prove that the elections were stolen. We need for them to come and say, here's the proof they weren't stolen. You know, we need to, like I said, we need to have voter registration every 2 years in person, paper voter card. We need to have citizenship and residency check. We need to have a witness signature. So making the clerks, that they can witness the signatures. We need to be stored by precinct. So, you know, a precinct is usually about 2,000 voters, 2,000 people. It's very easy to do. You know, we need to, the poll books, the mail-in voting. You know, you only need mail-in voting, or you only need absentee voting for people that are verified, that have a need for that. And it's just rampant. Election day, one day. The Constitution says there will be one day for voting. It needs to go back to one day you go vote. And on election night, they're counted where they're cast under video. They're scanned to a PDF, the ballot images, the tally sheets, paperwork. The voting type is, the results have to be signed by the judges. So here you have local oversight, local control. So then you don't get into people that want to say, well, the federal government shouldn't be in our elections. But the federal government can be in our elections, because if it's a federal election, you need to save these files that were destroyed for 22 months. And in Colorado, it's 25 months. So there needs to be more oversight. It needs to come down to a local level.
So are you in favor of the Save America Act or not?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. I believe that only voters that are eligible to vote should vote, because as we all know that if someone else that's not eligible, it dilutes the vote.
Voter registration every 2 years in person, paper voter cards, citizenship and residency checks, witness signatures, results stored by precinct, poll books for mail-in ballots only for people who are verified as needing them, ballots counted where they're cast and under video surveillance. And it's just like, yeah, duh, you know, and again, I'm not disrespecting Tina Peters here, because she's exactly right, and apparently this needs to be said, but it's like, what, you know, you hear that list, you know, if you were to take somebody, pluck somebody out from 100 years ago and go, here's what we want to do, they'd be like, what else would you do? What are you guys doing? Like, you just described the way you hold an election. If you guys are doing something different, you're doing it wrong. Why would you not do it this way? No, the only reason you wouldn't do it that way is because you wanted illegal immigrants to vote, or you wanted to use mail-in ballots to cheat. It's the only reason. It's the only possible reason. And like Tina Peters said at the beginning of the clip, she's like, you know, Democrats want us to prove that it's been stolen. Well, first of all, it's the authorities doing the stealing, and they have the information. They should be the ones who would hold people to account. But if they're the ones committing the crime, how do you think you're going to get that information ever? But she says, you know, really, they should have to prove that it's secure. The point about mail-in ballots is it can never be secure. Period. It can never be secure. You can never assure the wider populace, the wider public, you can never guarantee that the votes that came in were actually cast by the people who claimed to send them in. You just can't. It's impossible. Can't be done. Shouldn't be allowed. It's as simple as that. It's called the chain of custody. And if the chain of custody wouldn't be sufficient to present evidence in court, it shouldn't be sufficient to cast a vote for president. In other words, you can't just show up in court and go, this is the murder gun. Trust us. It was mailed to us yesterday. Well, where did it come from? How do you know it was the murder weapon? Did you follow who collected it? It's like, don't worry about any of that. We no longer have the gun, by the way, but trust me, you know, here's a photocopy of a picture of the gun. So you got to convict the guy for murder. It's like, no, you have to actually have, here's who collected the evidence. Here's who transferred the evidence. Here's where it was tested in a lab. Here's the scientist who tested it. Here's how they returned it. Like, you have to have the custody or else the evidence can't be shown. It's the same thing in voting. If you can't prove that it was you that cast the vote, it shouldn't be counted. Right? I mean, that's what I would love to ask a Democrat. How do you guarantee a mail-in ballot is the person who it says it is? There's no answer because there's not a way. Let me repeat that. And I'll give you $1,000 if you can get a real answer to this from a Democrat. Ask a Democrat, how do you guarantee a mailed-in ballot was actually sent by the person? It has to be at scale. I could find a single ballot. I could contact that single person. How do you do that for everybody that cast a ballot? It's impossible. It would cost too much money, be too many resources. You would actually have to go through name by name and call somebody, but then you'd have to verify you'd have to get them to show the ID anyway. Like, it doesn't make any sense. There's no answer. There's no way. If there was a way, it's not implemented now. If there was, even if you could ask somebody, how do you guarantee that a mail-in ballot is legitimate? First, there is no answer. Second, if they are able to come up with something, it's something they invented themselves and is not being implemented right now. So, we probably shouldn't have it. So here's a novel method of vote casting, which cannot be guaranteed, which cannot be made secure, which cannot be even tracked or monitored to any sufficient degree. Why was it ever allowed to be implemented? Nobody would do this, even in their own, you know, personal life, right? Even if I was just like, even if you're like an elementary school teacher and you're trying to vote on what the new class pet should be, a gerbil or a lizard, like, you're not just going to let some student come up and go, here's everybody's votes, ma'am. Don't worry. Don't ask them. I collected them. Here they are in envelopes. The envelope is sealed. So yeah, that's how you know it's true. It's good. So even that, you'd be like, go sit down. No, we're doing a real vote here because I want to actually understand what the majority of the people want. There's no way to guarantee a mail-in vote. That should be the end of the discussion. Why are we still talking? We have been talking about this for 6 years at this point. Just about this time. It was about June of 2020 that the lockdown had dragged on for about 3 months at this point. People were still thinking, oh, it'll be up by 4th of July. And we were sitting here going, no, this is all in service of the mail-in ballots because they're going to use the mail-in ballots to cheat. And they're going to do it in such an obvious way that's going to piss off Trump and the Trump Republicans. And they're going to use that to false flag us into being domestic terrorists for questioning the election. 6 years later, we've had to sit and watch it roll out exactly as we predicted, and nobody will step up to say the obvious.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its business?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there in the way of it. If you look at the number of countries that have had runaway inflation since World War II, you know, in my lifetime. It's very large. Once you create that, it becomes a different world. And of course, you have countries that have gone bankrupt like 6 or 7 times. I mean, it's just amazing what people do. Not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So this is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything.
And let's be clear, though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed. So here's Prince Charles, the king, announcing the digital chains, the mark of the beast system, and a dovetail with Tony Blair, who's globally, through the UN and Bill Gates, standardized the world ID that the UK, under orders of the king, I thought he's just ceremonial, no, he could dissolve Parliament anytime he wants, is now going into place. This all ties into everything. We'll talk to the top economist and great patriot, Dr. Kirk Elliott, in a moment about it, but here's the clips.
My ministers will also proceed with the introduction of digital ID that will modernize how citizens interact with public services.
Tell us a bit about what it means for what government should do in terms of its digital infrastructure, digital ID, data centers, and so on.
The first thing a country needs to do is to unify all of their data so it can be consumed and used by the AI model. You have to take all of your healthcare data, your diagnostic data, your electronic health records, your genomic data. We have to take all of this data we have in our country and move it into a single, if you will, unified data platform.
What they do is Oracle make big donations to Tony Blair's Institute, and Tony Blair's Institute advocates for further advantages for Oracle and Oracle-affiliated entities. Listen, the centralization of data and the centralization of power is part of a dark and nefarious agenda.
People are really crazy if they don't call you. You're on record, the biggest company, you have the best ratings, the best gold and silver prices. It is the smart move. Get a free consultation, they can roll over financial instruments.
This should be a happy time, right? So don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. There is a path to safety here financially, and that's what tangible assets do. This is what
God
the numbers
always
are
gives
telling
his
us.
People a way out, but the people perish always. For lack of knowledge.
Always. He always does. He's never going to say something, even if it's the mark of the beast. When he talks about it in Revelation, he's not going to say something unless we have a choice to either accept or reject, because he didn't create robots.
KEPM.com/gold. Sign up for the email there to get a free consultation. We'll call you right back. Or you can call the number 720-605-3000. The smartest investment you could have made in the last 3 years. I'm telling you right now, this is the place to go. 720-605-3000.
Ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We got a lot to cover here in the final segment of today's show. Again, a lot of just sort of responses and reactions to the Supreme Court decisions. And apparently the Supreme Court will tomorrow decide on one of the most important decisions they have to make. Let's go now to clip number 12. This is Steve Bannon responding to the fact that Mark Wayne Mullen, head of the DHS, despite being delivered victory on a silver platter with the Haitian TPS, Somali TPS, temporary protected status being revoked, has instead decided to just let him stay. Why? Who knows? I'm open to speculation. Here's Steve Bannon.
We're burning daylight. This gets me back to my favorite, Mark Wayne Mullins. I don't think he, first off, he's not with us. He's not a mass deportations guy. Now he nominated his buddy. You know, for Oklahoma being one of the greatest of the MAGA states, the political class there, not so much. Just not cutting edge. I think Mark Wayne Mullins has been a total, complete disaster as Homeland Security. I thought yesterday he was unprepared and kind of mumbling about, and even Tommy Lauren over at Fox lit him up, and other people have lit him up. But it was like confusing that he's now saying, well, what they should do is fill out the paperwork for permanent status. No. You've had plenty of time to plan for this. The buses should have rolled up. You should have gone out there to Ohio where they're eating the dogs and the cats. Go out. The buses should have been there and come on. You know where they live. Get the buses. Let's load the buses and let's have the planes right there at the airport. Heck, we'll give them private service and fly back. Don't even need to take commercial. All of the 20 million need to go. And if people are hearing these other immigration scams, they need to go immediately. Not, what are you talking about? You're going to give them time to that they can review and see if they got to fill out a form. Oh, they haven't filled out the forms. I don't give a damn about the form. What in the hell are you thinking about? You got to come on and you have to step into a decision. Good God. It's hard enough to have the Supreme Court ever have our back. They have your back across the board, and you're not ready. Why are you not ready? Why were the buses not rolling to Springfield? Why were the buses not going to where you know the temporary protective status is? And get on the bus. We're going to the airfield. Grab what you can. We'll ship the rest. We'll do it free. We'll ship the rest. You get free delivery. Hell, Mike Lindell gives it on the pillows. We'll give it all your stuff. We'll ship back. Just give us an address in Haiti, but the address is going to be Haiti because you're going to Haiti because you're a citizen of Haiti.
Yeah, it'd be nice, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be nice if that just happened like that? And again, the problem is the Trump administration won't just do it in a business-like fashion, which is all that this requires. Because what do you think would happen if the Trump administration, it would be this like, I mean, what they do is they make a big dog and pony show out of it and have whoever it is out there making videos and going, we are clamping down. We're going to send these people back and they like make a big deal out of it and make it this big. But then nothing actually happens. But then they don't actually deport everybody. So they just piss everybody off. They make this big performative thing that makes everybody think they're all, you know, they're these evil people doing this evil stuff. They're not even doing anything. They're just talking about it. The ideal would be the exact opposite, would be that we never hear from the Trump administration officials. We don't have to. We don't need to hear from them. The left is going to complain about whatever. You don't need to respond to them. And if you do, you need to respond like Merrick Garland responded. Now, in the case of Merrick Garland, he actually was persecuting innocent people. He actually was flagrantly violating the role that he was given in order to progress his own political agenda. I despise Merrick Garland with every ounce of my being. But damn it if I don't admire his ability to very calmly and with professional tenor do extraordinary things. That's all we need. We don't need Mark Wayne Mullen or whoever else, Deportation Barbie. We don't need any of these people doing any of this stuff. We don't need them talking about it. We don't need them selling the American people on it. We need very quiet and efficient operators to just do what the law requires. And if the left starts screaming about it, which they absolutely will, the response needs to be totally calm, totally disturbed. You just need to just go, well, this is the law and I'm following the law and I have no personal feelings about this one way or the other, and this is just what the law says. So if you want the law changed, talk to Congress. In the meantime, I'm doing my job. That's it. Oh, well, but don't you think that Haitians are, but can't we, but, you know, we offered them, and don't you think that, and you can just say that, and you just ignore them, and you just don't respond, and you just keep doing it. And that's it. It's done. Instead, they make all this noise, they make it a big production, they make it a big show, and then nothing actually happens. We need the exact opposite. So, like, even the way Bannon was just pitching it, even that is unnecessary. We don't need big buses. We don't need to make it a big show. It doesn't need to be, you get the hell out of here. We'll pack up your stuff and send it. It's like, that's fine. I get where he's coming from. But, like, that's not even necessary. All that's necessary is just, like, quietly, in a week or two, about 4 or 5 planes a day start taking off and shipping Haitians back home. And you don't need to tell anybody about it. You don't need to brag about it. You don't need to film it. You don't need to score points with it. It just needs to happen. God forbid the Trump administration ever just quietly and professionally do anything. I mean, they will. They'll quietly and professionally expel Palestinian students and anything else that they actually want to do, but they won't just enforce the law when that is literally all that's required. That's it. And also, I feel similarly when it comes to things like Anthony Fauci, where it's like we keep having these big public hearings where a bunch of noise is made, where a bunch of accusations are made, and then nothing happens. And nothing can happen. Like, it's not like, okay, we're having this hearing, and if it goes well, he goes to jail, and if it goes badly, he gets away. He's always getting away. He's always walking out of there, free man. So you're going to bring him up. You're going to let him lie to you like you did before. And then nothing's going to happen. What should be happening is we should just hear one morning, Anthony Fauci's been arrested, and when it comes up in the press conference, the administration spokesperson can just say, look, 15 million people died. We think he covered up and was responsible for some of those deaths. We have to treat this seriously. If he's innocent, then he'll be let go, but we have to let the rule of law take its course. No more questions. Thank you. That's it. That's all that needs to happen. Just buy the numbers, buy the book, enforcement of law, no shiny accoutrement, no, you know, big rally where it happened. Just do it. Just do it quietly. Just do it. Make it happen. And again, the left can cry about it. But the thing is, like, we understand the only power that the media has is the power that we give it, or that you give it in this case, Mr. President. It doesn't matter what they say if you don't respond to them. And there's a reason, there's a weird connection I'm trying to make here. And we're going to play that clip in just a second of Rand Paul talking about going after Anthony Fauci. He has reissued a request to have him criminally prosecuted. Good. That's a good first step. But at the same time, there are new studies out of places like Spain that show, again, incontrovertibly, that the COVID boosters cause cancer. They cause cancer. It has been proven in study after study. It is being discussed on mainstream media overseas. The American media has not mentioned it, will never mention it, because their role is directing the attention of the American people. And their purpose is directing that attention away from things that are actually happening towards things that aren't actually happening in order to get movement, political action to the thing that's not happening. And so the thing that is happening can continue to happen unabated. Do you understand what I mean? Do you understand what I'm saying? That if the media was just any percentage what they actually claim to be, they would be shouting from the rooftops about how the COVID boosters are causing cancer, causing turbo cancer, and are killing people. They'll never cover that because they don't care. because it's not in their agenda to start a big, you know, fight and trying to get justice for people who are given cancer from booster shots. They don't want to do that. They got other things they're doing. So they're going to ignore that. It's never going to rise to the point that it, you know, actually becomes a widespread discussion. We can try to force it. But at the end of the day, we can all know that it gives us cancer. We can all know that Anthony Fauci created the virus in a lab. But until he goes to jail for it, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Us knowing, it doesn't actually change anything until we change it. Until the information gets action behind it, none of this really matters. So let's go to that Rand Paul clip first. Here's Rand Paul talking about reissuing a subpoena to Anthony Fauci, hopefully holding him to account for being the world's greatest mass murderer. Let's watch.
Well, the investigation of COVID origins has been going on for several years. The Biden administration stymied us and wouldn't give us any of the documents. The Trump administration has been very cooperative, particularly Secretary Kennedy. They've turned over virtually everything. And what we now know, beyond a reasonable doubt, is that Anthony Fauci did indeed fund gain-of-function research. We have the evidence that the experiments were gaining in function. The viruses were becoming more lethal, more attachable to human cells, and more infectious. We do know that this was going on, that was funded by the NIH, specifically under the tutelage of Anthony Fauci. We know all of that, but we know even more now. We know that the initial estimate by the scientists at the CIA was that this came from the lab. They agreed with our supposition. But Anthony Fauci was able to coerce, cajole, persuade, and dangle money to get people in the intelligence community to change their vote. So a scientific commission within the CIA voted 6-1 to say it came from the lab. He somehow was able to get that change. We have evidence of that happening. The virologists that he handpicked that were big recipients of federal dollars, all of them initially were saying it looks like it was manipulated. The virus looks manipulated. He was able to convince them otherwise. We now have evidence that in January of 2020, that he was already acknowledging that the virus did not come from the wet market, that the wet market was a spreader event, but wasn't an initial event because we had lineages of people way before the wet market that were getting sick. Everyone acknowledged that, but for years he's been telling us it came from animals at the wet market. This was all misdirection. This was a conspiracy. This was a cover-up. And he has not really gotten his just desserts on this. And we want to make sure that the American public and that history records that he was involved with funding this dangerous research that led to a pandemic that killed 15 million people. There needs to be repercussions.
It's so unbelievably insane that Rand Paul is the only one that cares about this. It just hit me during that how crazy this is, because nothing he said there was speculation. None of it requires any faith or belief in Rand Paul himself. Like, this is all black and white evidence in their own words, with the attempt to cover it up, with, you know, the email talking about the conspiracy, including the line like, you need to delete this email so it doesn't get found later. Like, it is undeniable. So my question, the thing that really struck me listening to Rand Paul right there, is what the hell is wrong with everybody who believed in COVID? What the hell is wrong with y'all? See, I never fell for it. I never masked up. I would wear a mask occasionally if I felt like it. But typically it was, I actually kind of enjoyed the lockdown, going into stores and just looking people in the eyes. They tell you to wear a mask and just getting stuff off the shelf and paying. Never wore a mask, never locked down. Didn't take any boosters, wasn't rendered horribly sick because I, you know, took an injection that I didn't need. I didn't suffer from any of this stuff. You did. That was all because of Anthony Fauci covering it up his own complicity in the creation of the virus. Why do you not care about that? It's like, okay, so the people who were suspicious of the vaccine and the lab-created virus originally, we're the only ones who care now that it's all come out. But it's all come out now. It's not a question of belief. It's not a question of interpretation. If you got a single vaccine, do you not care that Anthony Fauci lied about where the virus came from? If you locked down, if your kid was forced to stay home from school, even if you were for it, if you were in favor of it, do you not have an even greater reason than me to be angry at Anthony Fauci? You believed his lies. You fell for the crap he was pushing. Your life got made tangibly worse because of what he did. Why does nobody care about this? Again, it's not speculation. It's not a conspiracy theory. Anthony Fauci knew where the virus came from. He lied about it. He covered it up. He conspired to conceal the creation of the virus for no reason other than covering his own butt. Because again, I could see how a leftist or a liberal could go, well, you know, maybe made a mistake. You could even like try to justify it somehow going, well, you know, they didn't know where it came from totally. And he had a reason to, you know, really want people to trust the science. Like whatever, you can make up whatever you want to try to justify it if you want. But like, there's no justifying this. There's no excusing this. There was no higher good that he was pursuing. This was not a crime committed in the pursuit of what he truly believed to be national security or, you know, health security for the American people. He lied and covered up because of his own base ambitions, because he didn't want to be blamed for it. And this had a tangible, real-world impact on our ability to fight the virus, on the proposals, the programs that were put forward to stop the spread of the virus. All of those things were predicated on the idea that we didn't know where this virus came from. We didn't know what it was. We didn't know how dangerous it was. So better safe than sorry. None of that had to happen if Anthony Fauci told the truth. If Anthony Fauci was honest about where it came from, we could have avoided almost every single one of the major negative impacts from COVID. Because if we knew where it came from, we could trace back the actual virus itself, and we would have known, which we did, and we were lied to about it, but this is the whole point, isn't it? But let's just, taking it on face value, if we had known where the virus came from, what virus it was, we would have known that it didn't kill young people, so we wouldn't have had to shut down schools. We would know that it didn't require us to say goodbye to our dying family members behind plexiglass. All of that was predicated on the lie that Anthony Fauci told. Why does nobody care that they were lied to? Why is there not a single Democrat in Congress who's mad at Anthony Fauci for doing this to them? Like, really think about that. Really think about what is going on psychologically in the minds of Americans who can be told with absolute certainty, dead to rights, first person evidence proof that Anthony Fauci created the virus in a lab and lied about it, and they don't care, even though they're the ones that believed him. They're the ones that stayed locked down. They're the ones that wore a mask. They're the ones that got the shots. But they don't care that he knowingly lied to them. And that I can't do anything about. I can't do anything about it. Sorry, that's, you got to do it. But just to close out here, we'll go to clip number 8. This is the bombshell from Professor Angus Dalgleish. Which again, if it's just crazy that people don't care about this, let's just watch.
That people who'd been stable with cancer melanoma for years started relapsing at the beginning of 22, and I asked for any reason why this might have occurred, and I noted they'd all been given boosters by their GPs, which I, if they'd asked me, I wouldn't have done that. And so we had to look around. What's the reason? Why would a booster allow a cancer to come back? Well, it turned out it was very simple, that boosters suppress the T cell response. The first two will increase it a bit, but a booster suppresses it. And that's exactly what we found. But then a group from Madrid published a wonderful paper saying T cell exhaustion after third COVID vaccine in cancer patients, with an incredible data. It showed it very, very clearly. And so therefore, any cancer suppressed and controlled by the immune system, you suspect might pop up after the booster. Surgeons noted their colorectal patients were very difficult to treat. They were presenting late and they were presenting young. And they found that these patients had all had the booster too. And they called, a red flag. And I called a red flag that just the suspicion that the vaccine might be involved in the cancer.
Are there any studies that have linked the mRNA to cancer? Is there any sort of medical process that you can allude to that would back that up?
The strongest are the epidemiological studies. And the strongest was from Japan, a paper by Gibbo and his colleagues, which just had the raw data, and they noticed that the number of new cancer cases went up with each booster vaccine.
So again, double-blind, confirmed studies out of Spain. This is not just a correlation. This is causation. They know it, but they're not reporting on it. Why is that not like the number one story across the country? Where are the blaring warning sirens saying the COVID boosters cause cancer? They're never going to come. They're never going to talk about this. Now I'll leave it up to you to decide whether that's because maybe they're just embarrassed, maybe they have their own personal reasons, or maybe it's because everything worked exactly as it was intended. Maybe they made the virus on purpose so they could release it on purpose, so they could lie about it, so they could get the lockdown, so they could rig the election, so they could stage January 6th, so they could start persecuting Trump supporters. Maybe that's why. Maybe they don't report on the mass death that Anthony Fauci initiated and then perpetuated on all of us because they like the mass death, because they're in favor of it and they understand the reason why all of this is happening, that none of this was a mistake and none of it was even unknown to them, that they helped cover it up just like Fauci helped cover it up. Of course, we were here the whole time telling you the truth the whole time, warning you the whole time about what was actually going on. I have no doubt that we saved God only knows how many lives during COVID by warning about the dangers of the COVID vaccine. And we will continue to do that, as unpopular as it makes us, as difficult as it makes our simple mission of informing the world, as we're constantly attacked under various claims, but always for the same reason, because we tell the truth about what they're up to. We give you the information they would rather have withheld. Support us in this mission by going to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, to let them know who sent you. That's going to do it for us. Big week of shows today. Tune in tomorrow, and we'll see you then.
In the forbidden mountains of ancient China, Alex Jones, the warrior, returns to complete his training. His fists thunder against globalist lies. Each board he shatters destroys another New World Order deception. Forged in the fire of truth, he trains day and night. Iron palm strikes, smashing through Big Pharma's walls. He prepares for the ultimate demon, Fentanyl the Dragon.
Oh, hello, Alex. It is I, Fentanyl the Dragon, your arch nemesis.
Fentanyl, you dare to return and face me?
Visit thealexjonesstore.com today.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to
fight. You better believe you got one.
America's worth saving. I seen this country build towns where there was nothing but dust and empty sky. Men worked sun up to sundown, built roads, railways, farms, and cities with their bare hands. People came here with nothing in their pockets and somehow carved out a life worth living. That's what made this place different. Not power, not money, freedom. And as long as there's still a few hard-headed Americans standing tall, America's story ain't over yet.
You can feel the noose tightening all across America. Fight the enemy before they hang freedom itself.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.